Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Action Radio. This is Greg Penglis coming to you from the historic district of downtown Milton on the banks of the beautiful Blackwater River. And now let's get into Action Radio.
All right.
Well, it looks like we're going to start the Hump Day Report a little bit early because Bill can't make it. I'm sort of tempted to play his theme in absentia just because it's a really good theme. In fact, he actually made it. It's the only theme that one of our reporters has actually made for the show. But so Bill will be back next week. So I get the whole hour. So if you want to call me, 215-383-3832 and talk about the many things that are going on in the news. We have our own news, of course, at Action Radio. I was just checking the world map. The show is starting to explode. It hasn't reached the multi-million level yet, but it will. We're certainly on our way. We've got a ways to go. Maybe I shouldn't characterize it in that particular fashion. But Indonesia and Zimbabwe have shown up on the international map. And so we are getting out. The United States portion keeps getting smaller. It's interesting. The listeners aren't getting smaller, but the portion of U.S. listeners is compared to the rest of the world. We have a lot more folks in Canada, Australia, England, France. Listening to us, we have African countries joining in. We've always had Russia and China. I guess they want to keep tabs on what we're doing. But the fascinating places are the Muslim countries. Iran listens, Indonesia listens, Egypt listens. And so it's interesting. I don't know if Morocco, I guess Morocco's Muslim too, but Saharan Africa as opposed to sub-Saharan Africa. But Saharan Africa is mostly Muslim. And we used to have Saudi Arabia. I guess they got a little disgruntled when Trump left. So they're not listening to us anymore. But it's catching on. It's really quite fascinating. In other news, we have our world's greatest doctor panel tomorrow. And so the usual team of Dr. Judy Mikovits, Dr. Brian Artis, Dr. Ben Marble, and Dr. Jim Thorpe will join us. We have a couple of military folks joining us. We have other folks who might be calling in. Shall see, but it's going to be Dr. Molly James also joining us for a bit too, and she was one of the speakers at the last Pensacola rally for medical freedom put on by Dr. Deborah Viglione, who's always welcome to join us. I'll check with her and see if she's going to be here tomorrow also. That's at a special time. That's 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. Central Time. And the reason we do that is because Judy's on the West Coast, and I don't want to get her up at 4 in the morning. So it's pretty simple. So, and Judy's kind of like the anchor of the show. And so it's really fascinating. She really kind of ties things together in so many different areas. And she's not a doctor. She's got PhDs in, I think, biochemistry, microbiology, and probably something else. I mean, the woman's a genius, but that's our group. And then we just keep adding to it. Oh, John Cullen's going to be here too. John Cullen is the data guy. He's the one that created that map that you see on Johns Hopkins University website for all the COVID deaths around the world, around the United States, different states, things like that. He's that guy. So he'll be joining us as well. He's going to be a regular on the panel. So we got our data people, we got our docs, we got our biochem, microbiology PhD. We had Patrick Wood last week, who does technocracy, the artificial merging of technology and bureaucracy, which is kind of scary when you think about it. Talk about artificial intelligence. It's pretty much artificial. But that's what we have. Anyway, so those are some of the things that are going on here. The show, we've got just some tremendous people who are with us now. Our latest and greatest is Mama B, who is now on Mondays for 3 hours. She's my co-host, basically, Mondays. And so we have we kind of get the first hour to chat, then we bring in maybe a guest in the second hour, and then by the third hour, all hell breaks loose, and everybody seems to want to join in. We had Jordan Carr, who is running for office of the Florida House of Representatives. She's retired. Well, I don't say retired, but she's basically discharged Air Force because she wouldn't take the dangerous and experimental COVID jab. We also had Emily Nunez yesterday, who got up before this, fortunately. She's a veteran of the Marines and the Navy, and a fascinating person. She's running for Florida House of Representatives also. And so we've got a lot of veterans running. We've got a lot of very interesting people running for office. You don't have the usual lawyers, which is interesting, which raises the question, do you have to be a lawyer to be a legislator? Well, no. In fact, I would say some of our founders were lawyers, but certainly not all of them. I don't think Ben Franklin was a lawyer. I think Thomas Jefferson was. Who contributed more than those two? Sam Adams, I think, was a brewer. he made beer, amongst other things that he did, a writer, things like that. I don't think Thomas Paine was a lawyer. Anyway, so you go through the founders, and in the same tradition here at Action Radio, you know, I am not a lawyer. I don't have a broadcast degree, a communications degree. You know, I don't have years in journalism or media. I don't, like I say, I'm uniquely unqualified for all the things to do here, which is kind of funny, but it seems to work out. All right. Anyway, so let's get on to Matthew McConaughey. So it looks like the insurrection that is currently occupying the White House is so incompetent. You know, it'd be nice if it was a good insurrection, if such a thing was possible, but this isn't even a good insurrection. This is a moron insurrection. This is an idiocracy. So the idiocracy is in charge, which is government by idiots, in case you're wondering what I was talking about. I don't know if I made up the word or heard it somewhere. I'm not really sure, but it seems to fit. So we have an idiocracy. So the idiocrats – I'm sorry. I crack myself up sometimes. So the idiocrats are there in Washington doing really stupid things, and apparently not one of them can speak properly. We had Jen Psaki, the liar in chief. She's gone, which is good. She was actually really good at her job of propagandizing, lying, projecting, reversing, you know, putting the blame on everybody else. She was like the perfect criminal defense attorney, in a bad sense, not in a good sense. You know, everything was a technicality to be avoided. Now you've got Jean-Pierre, black, gay, female. I guess those are her qualifications, right? She's not as good. She always has to refer to her talking points. At least Jen Psaki could think on her feet and look straight at Peter Ducey and come back with something that's totally propagandized, that pre-rehearsed, and because she pretty much knows what he's going to ask. We all do, but no one else is asking it, so it's up to him. Anyway, so I'm sure she kind of like pre-plans what she was going to say. Jean Pierre, or whatever her name is, doesn't do that. She has a series of talking points on her page, and she refers to the right one, which is kind of funny when she gets the wrong one. So she'll give a perfectly straight answer to a question that wasn't asked, which is really kind of interesting too, which proves she doesn't know what she's doing. So the job requires more than just being black, gay, and female. It's interesting. Yeah, affirmative action. I'm sorry. You know, like I say with affirmative action, the qualified don't need it, and the unqualified don't deserve it. So let's get back to Matthew McConaughey. So they've got an actor to actually speak from the White House podium. So at this point, he's acting as a government official, as far as I'm concerned. If you speak behind the White House podium, you're acting as an agent of the White House. And so as a public figure, as a politician, I feel qualified to criticize, because that's kind of what we do here. So the right messenger, I mean, he's really good at delivering that message. He's a popular actor. He's done some great films. You know, he was in the one with, what's his name? Samuel Jackson. It was a trial film. It was very similar to Kill a Mockingbird with Gregory Peck back several years ago. White lawyer, black defendant. It was a great trial. Great film. Both of them. And, well, of course, To Kill a Mockingbird is a classic. And I've forgotten what I think it was, Murder in the South or whatever it was, the film that McConaughey did. Great film. You know, really great film. In fact, it made it – some of the older films seem kind of from a different world, but this looked very realistic, very very possible in our time. All that aside, what he said was completely wrong. He doesn't understand the Constitution. He doesn't know the difference between what criminals do and what law-abiding do. He thinks that you can put aside the Second Amendment and make laws superior to it. He's called for the wrong solutions. And the thing that he misses and that a lot of people seem to miss about this whole debate over our gun rights is that that they blur this distinction between use and owning and carrying, that they think that punishing the law-abiding will somehow affect criminals. Well, the fact that criminals are outside the law, which is the definition of criminal, means that no law is going to change anything. So the only way that's going to change things is to get the people individually who have demonstrated through the due process part, that they've actually demonstrated, they've admitted, they've confessed, they've provided evidence that they are a dangerous person. So you go after them. So the solution to people that are assassins, that are the murders in supermarkets, that are mowing down people in parades with SUVs, that are killing people on subways, that are shooting, you know, children in schools. The solution to all these things is to try and stop bad people who have shown evidence that they are bad and that need to be either mental health checked or somehow restrained. Now, does that mean you have red flag laws? No, because red flag laws, you know, affect the innocent who have not been through due process. Okay. Does that mean you raise the age? No, because raising the age affects all the people that that wanted to buy a gun at 18, because they're adults. Okay. And what if we raise let's raise if you want to raise the age to buy a semi-automatic rifle to 21, maybe we should raise the driving age to 21. How would that be? Maybe 25. I think driving at 25. You think that'd be an interesting thing to do? Oh, but you can't take my right to drive away. Well, the government says it's not a right. I say it is. But the question is, if you're going to arbitrarily, you know, if you want to make us all safer, we'd be a lot safer if the driving age was 25. Because 25-year-olds are more sensible than 18-year-olds or 16-year-olds. They just are. Okay? And why do we have 16-year-olds drive? So they can get to school, you know, so the parents don't have to keep taking them forever. So they can go places. They can go to things that they have to do. They can go to their sports events. They can go to after-school activities. They can stay longer after school, you know, when the school buses have gone. There's a lot of good reasons for 16-year-olds driving. But do you punish all 16-year-olds because a 16-year-old stole their parents' alcohol, got drunk, and did something really horrendous or horrible or even murderous? No, because the only person that you should affect is that person. So the whole point of constitutional rights is that the rights of the law-abiding, the rights of the individual are sacred, are superior to every other law in the country. Rights are superior to laws. It's just a simple fact. If you want to understand anything about this country, understand that rights are superior to laws, okay? Which means that there is no, quote, gun control law in the world that can touch the Second Amendment. Any proposed or existing law that touches in any way or even encroaches upon your absolute right to own and carry firearms is automatically illegal. It is automatically unconstitutional. It is automatically moot, okay? Now, the fact that society in the country doesn't recognize that is the fault of a lot of pro-gun folks, a lot of pro-gun rights people in Congress, the gun lobbies that aren't making the argument clear enough. And so I'm going to write a press release after the show today to make it clear enough to everybody, very simply. Okay, statutory law is subordinate to constitutional law. All right, the Constitution is the supreme law of the land. Every statute is under the Constitution is subordinate to it. So any law that touches in any way a sacred right in the Constitution is automatically moot. So the idea that the Congress is even debating, quote, gun control laws, in other words, gun rights abandonment laws, is a waste of time because everything they're doing is illegal. It's that simple. Now, why somebody doesn't just stand up and say that other than me, I don't know. I don't know where the gun groups are. I don't know where the gelding GOP members are. I don't know where my own congressman is on this. I'd love to talk to him about it. You know, Matt Gaetz, call the show. Yeah, I'll give you an argument that you can use in Congress directly. You can put it directly in the congressional record. But I'll be sending him as well as a bunch of other folks my press release after the show. But it's very simple. Constitutional law, the Constitution, our individual rights are supreme over any statutory law. Then why do I make this such a clear distinction? And I talked to this with Emily Nunez yesterday, she's great, by the way, who's running for state office. The reason I make this so clear, the reason I do this is because the right to own and carry is absolute, because all rights are absolute. If rights are not absolute, then they aren't rights. There's no such thing as reasonable restrictions on rights. There's no such thing as a compelling state interest that affects your rights. Your rights are absolute. Your rights are supreme to any statutory law. Well, the reason I make this distinction is because the uses of firearms come under statutory law. The right to own and carry is Constitution. That's the difference. That's the clear difference. So it doesn't matter what they propose. And the reason that uses of fire, hey, Pianki, I see you there on the phone. The reason that uses of firearms have to be statutory and not constitutional is because of the principle that all rights are absolute. So if anybody was stupid enough to say that all uses of firearms are a right, that's irrational. That's insane. You can't equate target shooting with mass murder. That's ridiculous. Okay, and yet that's what the left does. They're saying that the uses of firearms are directly related to the Second Amendment, and that's simply not true. So if you want to understand this argument, if you want to understand how to make this argument to your friends, colleagues, you know, family members that don't understand, anybody else that doesn't understand, it's very simple. The uses of firearms, being both legal and illegal, have to remain in statutory law. Statutory law is under constitutional rights. And that's the distinction. And once you understand that, everything else makes sense. So how do you stop bad people from doing bad things? Well, in a free society, you know, the reason that we don't stop everybody is so that everybody has rights. Those people that are bad, you know, we try to use due process. We try to investigate. But quite frankly, you know, you can't take away the rights of everybody in order to stop a few bad people, because now you're creating a greater crime by stopping the rights on everybody. And you've abandoned your free society. So what you're saying is you've destroyed your country. So we're going to destroy our country for a few insane whack jobs that are killing people. So how do you stop the people that are killing people? Well, first of all, with the implements of your freedom and the implements of your self-preservation. Firearms, okay? The way you stop people with guns is people with guns. It's just that simple. You're responsible for your own safety, all right? So this idea that the government is responsible for your safety is also insane. They know they're not. Why do you think they have guns? So what we've created here is a situation of the Second Amendment in reverse. And the other thing to keep in mind, too, is that the left, those ideas of taking your gun rights were exactly the same the day before Uvalde as they were the day after. They haven't changed. So their agenda has not changed a bit. They're just using Uvalde and the shopping center in Buffalo and everything else to make their case. So you can make my case. Let me ask Bianchi if I made my case. Bianchi, have I made my case pretty clear? Is there any doubt in your mind what I'm saying? I want to make sure I get this right.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And I want to see you write this down, too. And it's only about a half a page. But you know another thing, too, that we need to contemplate is that just as you have some cities declaring themselves sanctuary to this, to that, what is it, one of the northeastern states has declared itself as being a sanctuary for abortion. Well, other states can be a sanctuary for the Second Amendment, and also they can say...
Yeah, I wrote that article already. I wrote that article back in 2016, gun sanctuaries. Yeah, Second Amendment sanctuary zones. Yeah. In fact, I'll tell you a quick story just to jump in here. I was back in California, and I'm looking for my first talk show job. And this is where, I ended up out here, which is great. But this is before, the heart surgery and some of the other stuff. This is back 2016. So, in fact, it was the summer before Trump got elected. And so here I'm. I haven't had, my major surgery yet. So I'm still pretty happy. Anyway, so I wrote this article and in what's the Canadian press? I forgot. Judy McLeod's magazine. Canada Free Press. There we go. And I ended up calling a station up in Redding, California. Now, Redding is up in the northern part of California. It's basically the California Free Zone, and they want to form the state of Jefferson. So Northern California, with Redding being the capital, Southern Oregon, are like-minded conservative American patriots compared to the leftist Marxists that occupy Sacramento and below and, Eugene, Oregon, and above. And so I called the station and I said, would you be interested in sponsoring a bill that makes Northern California a Second Amendment sanctuary? And they're like, yeah. I said, so you're not going to obey California gun laws that are illegal because the Constitution is supreme. You're not going to obey federal laws. And then, yeah. So we've been talking about this for a while. So the idea of a Second Amendment sanctuary. In fact, let me pull up the article. I'll post it in the gun group and you can see what I'm talking about. But and I'll put it in the Action Radio group too. But yeah. Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. And I wrote a Second Amendment, Second Amendment sanctuary for Santa Rosa County here in Florida. I wrote one, too, to be, away from the red flag and some of the other disgusting things that were done after the Parkland assassinations that were not related to, criminals. Anyway, back to you. I'm sorry. I get carried away.
Yeah, exactly. And those people who are found guilty of creating false red flags need to be prosecuted because that will be something that will be used for spite or just for out of some nefarious reason. That's because you have a disagreement with a neighbor. Who was it that their neighbor punched them in the nose? I can't think of his name.
Well, I'm not sure of that, but in fact, I'll tell you that probably the biggest use of red flag laws is going to be women in divorce cases. Now, is that a sexist thing to say? Well, let me put it this way. More men own guns than women. Although that's changing, which is going to be great. It's going to be interesting when a guy, hauls up his spouse and gives, when women start getting being affected by red flag laws. That would be interesting. But and I know this because I used to work in a gun store. Years and years ago, I worked in a gun store. And a woman called up. And she said, just won my husband's guns in a divorce, and I want to sell them, and I want to know how to dispose of them properly. She says, what should I do with them? I said, you should give them back to their rightful owner. And she hung up on me. True story. Anyway.
Yeah, and another thing, too, you hear me say this every day. Mm-hmm. People, wear your gun. Just like you would carry your umbrella because it's going to be raining. It's the way you would wear the hat because it's going to be sunny outside. Wear that gun so people can see it.
Oh, absolutely. It's interesting. I just pulled up Second Amendment sanctuaries and a bunch of articles came up. Maybe I'll do this for Friday's show. I don't know where mine is. How come I didn't have my article up here? Oh, here we go. Now mine's at the top. So, yeah, this is one that I wrote. This is back, December 27, 2016. So this was after Trump got elected. Second Amendment sanctuary cities and action radio in action. And put, if socialist leftist cities like San Francisco, Chicago, New York, and a bunch of others nationwide can pass sanctuary city laws to harbor fugitive illegal aliens from federal law enforcement, then why can't cities, counties, and other entities under the oppression of unconstitutional gun laws create Second Amendment sanctuary cities where no infringing gun laws apply? A Second Amendment sanctuary is where a town, city, or county government has passed laws outlawing the enforcement of any touching of the right to own and carry any firearm. It is where law enforcement officers honor their sworn oath to the Constitution and refuse to arrest anyone exercising only their right to own and carry a firearm, regardless of infringing unconstitutional laws still on the books and in defiance of any orders of superiors, judicial orders, executive orders, or any orders. It is where Americans unaccustomed to their birthright freedoms can actually experience what it would be like if we were a free country and the Second Amendment were fully enforced. That's the opening two paragraphs. Hello? I know he's there somewhere.
I'm going to get that and pass it on to some show hosts and tell them, hey, this is a good topic for a show.
Yeah, Second Amendment Sanctuary. Well, I'm going to post it right
pass
now.
Pass it on to me. Give me a link to that if you want, please.
I'll put it in your messenger. Hang on. Let me bring back Facebook. I usually, in the interest of the clarity of the signal, here at Action Radio. It's best if I have fewer windows open, and I have enough windows open anyway, just to show that I try not to open Facebook while I'm actually on the air. So let me put this on there now. I'm going to put it on my page.
Amazed.
What's that?
I'm amazed that some of these parents with these Valdez are hollering out, telling people to do something when they, in fact, had the power to do something within their own cell as far
exactly.
as how the school, how the doors is locked, how the one teacher said that, I read an article, one teacher said he was not even warned of the shooter. So first you have to have self-discipline and
right.
self-accountability before you start spreading out, reaching out, trying to get others to be accountable.
Well, and this is the thing too, yeah, so they're demanding that the government make everybody else accountable when they drop the ball. You know, I do believe in a civic duty. I do believe that, although I would not force, I would never make it illegal, but I do believe that part of your civic responsibility is to, take action when action is required. Remember the story I told recently that there was a state trooper, a state police officer here in Florida at one of our local supermarkets. I pulled in, and then he pulled in really quickly and started walking briskly in, and I'm carrying my Glock, right? So concealed, I got my shirt over it. So, but my first thought immediately was, I want to help. Help is needed. I want to be there. There was no regard for my personal safety. That thought never entered my head. I just started, but I didn't want to walk so closely that he got suspicious. So I'm like, behind enough that he's doing his thing. And then I'm walking, I'm listening. I'm sort of trying to be, situational awareness. I'm looking around me. Is anybody else in the parking lot? Other cops showing up, what's going on? And it was just, I don't know what it was. He just had to make a purchase real fast, because I saw him in the line really quickly. So whatever was urgent, no, it wasn't donuts. But the thing was that I was all set to go and to help and to take cover and to, if necessary, draw my firearm and use it. That's just part of my civic duty, and I don't think twice about that. It's just, it would never occur to me not to do that. It's like when I was a flight instructor, it would never occur to me not to save the airplane, do everything within my power and then some, for my student, me and the people below and everything else. That's just what you do.
Absolutely. You got to stop that plane from corralling into a rural home.
Yeah. Did you hear about Los Angeles, which is why, this is a great segue. Did you hear what happened in L.A.?
No, I didn't.
It was a little town called Hemet. Now, I've actually landed there in a plane. Hemet is in the middle of nowhere. It's kind of a desert. It's completely flat. In fact, you look at the picture, and I was watching One American News, and they had this picture of a probably a single engine that crashed, and the pilot's badly injured, badly burned. It was a really horrible situation, which means they probably didn't turn the fuel off before they crashed. So I don't know who the instructor is, but I really want to talk to the instructor on that one because something is definitely wrong with what happened there. And maybe the student was a bad student. I don't know. But, they don't review the instructors that taught people. And in fact, I went to the FAA with a program saying, I want to investigate crashes and I want to talk to the people that survived the crashes, and I want to talk to instructors, and I want to talk to their examiners, and I want to see if I can find common threads. You know, this is a big project. I outlined the whole thing. A big, you know, that I want to see if I could find common threads in the fault of training that was creating accidents. Because I believe there are several flaws in the way we train pilots that contribute to accidents. One thing, this person landed in the backyard beside a perfectly open straight road, beside a perfectly open field. Now, how the hell they ended up in the backyard with all that landing space, I don't know. And the area of Hemet where this thing happened is completely flat. There's more landing space than you could possibly imagine. You know, when we trained over San Francisco and Oakland, we didn't train over San Francisco. You couldn't really fly over San Francisco. It's too close to SFO. But we used to get bay tours, and we fly over the Golden Gate Bridge at, I think it was 1,600 feet, because the towers were 600 feet, and we kept our 1,000 feet above the towers. So we fly over 1,600 feet. Believe me, it's close enough for a great view, trust me, flying over the Golden Gate Bridge. We did that all the time, then we head north. But the thing was, we were flying over urban areas all the time. And our landing spots were the freeways. And we always knew, we were always gliding distance from a freeway, just in case. You know, when we practice over San Pablo Bay, you know, but you just do that. So how the hell this pilot ended up in crashing into a backyard cinder wall, all these landing spaces available, doesn't make any sense to me. Anyway, go ahead.
Well, just like we're talking about Valdez, the school, the things that were not put in place and those that were put in place was not being implemented. Same thing with flying too. You know, you're going to crash. You won't have an emergency land. You turn the fuel off. But most importantly, you get ready to take off, you make sure your fuel is on, or you end up like a friend of mine upside down the bean field on the other side of the runway.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Oh, he was okay, but he had to pay for some beans.
Oh, God, he was okay. Yeah, that's, you know, it's one thing if you lose the airplane, there's always insurance. You know, so there's a way around that. But as far as the other stuff, yeah. I mean, we go through our flow checks. You know, for those of you that haven't flown a small airplane, go out and take a lesson. It's really fun. But before you land, you know, from the bottom, you know, fuel off. You know, see if I can remember. I think we had you know, throttle mixture, ignition. You know, turn your key off, mags off. Primary and then locked, and you make sure everything's off. And that's just that's your basic flow check before you. And I haven't done this for, you know, 20 years. I'm going to get back into it, trust me, because it's fun. But you never really leave, your flow check never really leaves you. And so you just go through everything. And a single engine airplane takes about 5 seconds, maybe 10, you know, before you land to make sure everything's off. So that when you land, there's no the chance of fire is drastically reduced. If your fuel is off, if your electricity, the battery, you know, the electrical system is off, you're pretty well protected in a small plane as long as you don't hit nose first. You know, they're built for you know, stuff. That's what the gear is for.
Absolutely. The same flow chart when you get ready to go outside. Make sure you got your shoes on, your pants, your shirt. You got your hat, you got your keys, you got your wallet, you got your pistol.
I do a pre-flight before I walk out the door. Yeah, it's kind of fascinating. Once that pilot thing's but gun owners need to do the same thing. Got your gun, got your extra magazine, got your holster, you know, the clip is secured, you know, the magazine's secure in the well. You know, you got your keys, you know, got your cover, you know.
Got your phone.
Your phone.
Hey, when you come out of the store, that you made a purchase, you make sure that you got, you're in possession of your wallet, whether it's in your pocket or in your purse. It's just a self-assurance of that you're getting prepared for what you hope don't happen. And that is you get someplace and realize that you left your wallet. I've done it once before and paid for it, but, you know, sometimes people make mistakes. Hopefully that mistake is not a deadly one, nor is it going to cause injury or severe loss.
Yeah, I had some friends of mine, they talk about it being properly dressed. So in other words, you know, if you don't have your gun, you don't have your holster, you don't have your equipment, your knife, your wallet, your keys, you know, you're not properly dressed. You know, you need to be equipped to go about your daily business. And they consider the gun every bit as essential as the keys and the wallet. And it was just part of being properly dressed, and that's how they expressed it. And you think about it that way; it's really interesting. So you're not dressed, you're not fully equipped, you're not ready to go. If you're a gun carrying, and this is not for the people that aren't carrying guns. I mean, you can get there, you should, but for the folks that are regular carriers, you know, I think we have a responsibility. You know, especially if you have a concealed carry permit, to carry concealed, don't leave it at home. And there are times when I don't. I'm never going to say when. You know, when I don't and do. But the point is that. You know, to exercise that right exists in its exercise. So what do you think of Matthew McConaughey? Did you hear his speech or part of it last night? I'm curious.
No, I didn't. I didn't hear it.
Yeah. Well, unfortunately, I'm forced to listen to more Fox News because I have to get my computer going to listen to One American News because they were taking off DirecTV. So I still have to find a new – I got to get myself one of those smart TV things. So I got a lot of well, I'll get back to my article later. The article is fun. Anyway, the guys in Redding, California, when I had on the station, they loved it. I don't think the podcast is still available. So you go to the article, and it says click on the podcast. You're not going to get it. Let's talk about other things. I've got some new things. We've got until 8 o'clock when Wynn joins us, and then 8:30, Chancey's going to join us. And then we got Michael Volpe. Michael asked me if he could do a special on the Johnny Depp Amber Heard trial. Now, I've watched none of the coverage. I know absolutely nothing about this. So, but Michael's going to fill us in more. So that's what we have on for the rest of the day. I've got something I'm starting here, which is my COVID shot suspected death list. And the first person on the list, this is this is from June 2nd, former NFL football player Marion Barber found dead at 38. Okay. Now, what makes it a COVID suspected shot is the fact that he's an athlete. He's still fairly young at 38, and they don't give a cause of death. And this is from, the source is Vibe. There were other sources, but I like this one. Vibe Corrine, C-O-R-R-I-N-E, June 2nd, 2022. So last week. Former NFL player Marion Barber III. Well, first of all, anybody named Marion as a guy is going to have to be tough. That's just, you know, John Wayne's name, Marion Morrison or something like that. Anyway, Marion Barber III has died at the age of 38. The ex-Dallas Cowboys running back was found dead in his Frisco, Texas apartment. The cause of death is not yet known. Really? According to reports, on Wednesday, June 1st, Barber was discovered unresponsive while police were carrying out a welfare check on a beloved athlete. Why was he getting a welfare check? Maybe we should talk about that. Ex-football players make a lot of money. Was he one of these guys that blew it all?
Someone was trying to reach him on the phone and couldn't reach him. So,
well, it says welfare check. Oh, so it was a check. Okay, checking on his welfare. Oh, I see. That's not a welfare check. That's a checking on his welfare. Okay, I misunderstood. Correction, I misunderstood. Anyway, it says, although it's unclear who made the 911 call, police say there were no evident signs of foul play. Now, as I've asked people before, doctors, you know, how long does it take to determine cause of death? It's really not a big thing. I mean, they can do it fairly quickly. I mean, you've done it instantaneously. But wouldn't a blood test tell you pretty quickly if they've had a COVID shot?
I couldn't tell you.
Don't NFL players have to take the COVID shot? Or no?
I couldn't tell you.
We need a sports person. All right, let me get you my second suspected COVID shot death. Alaska Airlines passenger dies during flight, May 17th, 2022. Updated this morning. Chris Williams, Fox 11, Nashville, Tennessee. Alaska Airlines has confirmed an unidentified passenger recently died during a flight. A guest passed away. Here's the quote. A guest passed away during our flight from Seattle to Nashville on Monday. Company said in a statement to Fox television stations, our hearts are with the family. Out of respect for their privacy, we will not bear further details. In other words, it's a COVID shot. Okay, I'm not laughing. I mean, it's tragedy, you know. But the irony that they're not saying. It says, according to WKRN, the deceased passenger was removed once the plane landed. Well, that's good. At Nashville International Airport after arriving shortly after 3 p.m. local time. A cause of death has not been given. Bingo. There's my clue. You know, COVID shot. And depleted oxygen environment of an airplane. Because you and I know that airplanes are pressurized to 8,000 feet. They're not pressurized to sea level. So you combine a COVID shot, which deprives you of oxygen and screws up your systems, with the oxygen deprivation that everybody has on an airplane because they don't pressurize to sea level, that's ripe for COVID shot deaths. In fact, I'm surprised there weren't more during the mask wearing, which takes your oxygen level down even further. I'm surprised everybody wasn't passed out on those airplanes who had a COVID shot. What do you think?
Possibility.
Yeah. So those are my two COVID shot ones. Let's get to another one. You're gonna appreciate this story. The Western Journal. Pregnant woman uses AR-15 to drop armed robber attacking her 11-year-old daughter. So this is what we call the safe and effective use of firearms, which is why you have to maintain. Oh, did you see my Facebook post today? Can't believe I did this one. This is one of my more outrageous ones. I said, demand gun care, keeping access to safe and effective AR-15s and other family defense care technology. What do you think? Gun care.
Oh, yeah. It was another case where a guy was dropped after he was he was pistol whipping the lady's husband out in the yard. Mm-hmm. For some reason or another, she goes to hear the commotion, goes to check on it. Then the guy shoots at her. She runs back and gets the AR, mm-hmm. and pops out on the porch, and
yeah.
then it's on. He ends up dead.
This is actually anti-woman. To deny women AR-15s because they are what I'm going to start calling safe and effective. You know, just like they say for COVID shots, which we know are neither safe nor effective. But AR-15s are safe and effective when used properly. You know, in fact, they're
absolutely.
That's the whole
right
point.
Size kind of remind me of a violin.
How's that?
Not too big, not too little, just right.
Yeah, I can't play violin. I think a viola is the smallest thing I could get my hands around. Maybe I should be a cello player. Anyway, but yeah, no, I know what you mean. I'd love to have an electric violin in my band. Anyway, listen to this. So it says here, this is Samantha Chang, C-H-A-N-G, June 6th. So that would have been Monday. She says, as Democrats rabidly push for more, quote, gun control amid the terrifying crime waves ignited by their soft on crime policies, there are daily reminders of why our Second Amendment right to self-defense must never be infringed. One of the most poignant examples involved an 8-month pregnant woman who used an AR-15 rifle to defend her then 11-year-old daughter and injured husband during a violent home invasion 3 years ago in Lithia, Florida. At the time, her husband, Jeremy King, was being pistol whipped and kicked in the head by 2 masked burglars. She says, them guys came in with 2 normal pistols and my AR stopped it. This is what King says. This is an exact quote from Bay News 9 in Tampa 2019. And then we said here another quote, my wife evened the playing field and kept them from killing me. And that's her husband. And so, yeah, they came in heavily hooded and masked. As soon as they got the back door open, they had a pistol on me and was grabbing my 11-year-old daughter. And this is the husband. So, yeah. So AR-15s, we should take a poll. What's more safe and effective, an AR-15 or a COVID shot?
That's a good one.
Yeah. Let me put that. I'll put that on Facebook.
Funny but
what's
true.
More, let me put it on right now for my Facebook friends. Now let me do it later. I'm just going to write down a little comment to myself here. This is how I do this. I'll probably put that in my press release too. You're on my press release list, so you'll get it. Safe and effective. Effective AR-15 or COVID shot. See, the thing is the COVID shots kill people when used as intended. AR-15s don't. AR-15s save people when used as intended. So that's the difference. Cigarettes kill people when used as intended. So I have no use for cigarettes. I wouldn't make them illegal, but they are kind of stupid and irrational to smoke. But people have the right to be stupid in this country. Although I wouldn't put that in the Constitution. But, AR-15s are much safer and more effective than COVID shots, when you think about it. Isn't that a great thing? How come the gun groups don't think of this stuff? How come I have to do it? What's going on, Bianchi? my first...
Well, you know, it's like... You like O'Connell is talking about they're willing to sit down and compromise. That uh-huh. there is ridiculous, but it's political. It's political. We're coming upon midterm, and it's political, and they run things out there, throw things out there on the table, roll the dice, and sooner or later they stop tumbling around and stop. And everything else go right on to its normal business.
But they don't have the right to compromise. There is no right of anybody in Congress to compromise on the Second Amendment. In fact, they sworn an oath specifically to not compromise on the Second Amendment. There is no compromise. The Second Amendment is absolute. I've been through all that. I'm not going to do it again. I'll do it the
first time. You are right. But, you know, once again, we come to this problem, just like we try to make people, hey, where are your gun? Well, if people don't push back,
yeah,
then they think they can get away with it each and every time. Mm-hmm. Ain't nobody paying no attention. I'll say this and yeah. watch it just go over your head. That's what they do.
Yeah.
And they, being politicians like O'Connell and senators and congressmen, that's exactly what they do. They call themselves catching the people sleep. The people that's affected, mm-hmm. which is based on emotion, they hear what they say, and sooner or later everything just tied door.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's crazy. Like I say, I'll be talking about this too, but to these people, you know, and the other bogus argument that really bothers me is when they say that these gun control laws, you know, won't be effective in stopping criminals, you know, and it doesn't matter. They're missing the point. These laws are illegal because they violate the Second Amendment. It doesn't matter. It's kind of ironic that even if these laws, you know, did do what they said they were going to do, you know, for certain criminals, they're still violating the rights of every other American. You know,
you don't
have to evaluate. You can't evaluate what gun control or gun rights laws based on their effect on criminals. It doesn't matter their effect on criminals because their effect on the law abiding is absolute. And that's the problem.
You're absolutely right. It's not going to affect a criminal from being a criminal, but what it's going to do is going to hamper and restrict a law-abiding citizen from having access to what they need to protect themselves, their family, and their property.
So all proposed gun rights restrictions are, by definition, violations of individual rights and a crime on law-abiding citizens. So that is a crime. So gun control laws are an actual crime in and of themselves. It doesn't matter their effect on criminals. First of all, criminals don't obey the law, so it's kind of a moot question anyway. But they never argue that. They say, well, this, you know, the assault weapons law, you know, didn't affect crime and assassinations as much as the left says. It doesn't matter. It really doesn't matter because it was unconstitutional to begin with. It never should have existed. Where was the Supreme Court? You know, how come the Supreme Court wasn't recalled for not overturning that the day it was signed? There's a question.
Well, you know, just like you see predators, when they attack a group, they always go for the weakest ones. In other words, the ones that's not armed, either with a natural arm, like horns or big hooves. So that's the same thing that's played out with criminals as we see them in the human world. They go out just like the gentleman in Buffalo. Hey, they say he cased the place out and seen, what, one security guard? What if he had looked over the checkout lines and looked over behind the people that's pushing the carts and he seen on their hip a weapon? You think they would have stayed there long? They would have went someplace else.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's a huge deterrent. You know, and Jim Dykes, who's our Second Amendment reporter, he's a director of Florida Carry, said something really interesting, that the cases of openly carried firearms being taken are extremely rare. I mean, everything happens. So, you know, anything can happen, but it's not something that you really have to worry about. Cause I was thinking about that, you know, how about, you know, cause I, when I was my brief time in federal law enforcement, you know, they taught us firearm retention techniques and things like that. And when I carry my Glock, it's right snug against me. I can feel it all the time. I know it's there. If anybody came to touch it, I'd know it immediately. I don't have to see them, you know, I'd feel it, you know, and would react accordingly. But that's another part of carrying a gun is to make sure it is close enough to you so that you know exactly where it is at all times. But the idea of firearms being taken from people, you know, you're going to get someone that, first of all, you're not going to let anybody get that close behind you anyway. You're going to feel them. You're going to know they are there. The chances of someone stealing your firearm, although it does happen, but it happens to the police, I know, when they're struggling, usually on the ground, they're already wrestling. You know, you're already in a compromised position. That's a different thing. That's when you need concealed carry holder to bail you out. So if a perp attacks one person who's openly carrying, then another openly carrying person or a concealed carry person needs to come to their aid immediately. And I'm sure they would, part of the duty too. Anyway, go ahead. And then I got another article
there's
for you.
There's so many models and styles out there today. You could be sitting in a theater eating a bag of popcorn, and in that bag of popcorn, you got a Bond's arms Derringer. That's 410 on the top and a 45 ACP on the bottom.
Oh, please. Yeah, I'm not convinced. Derringers. Well, there are actually, if you look online, you can get these deep cover holsters that actually are below pant level, and you just pull this flap up and up you come. I don't know if I want to say this on the air. I need a smaller gun. I need something more concealable. You know, I'm not going to say for where, but a single stack 9mm I'll be looking into here fairly soon.
You're talking about yourself, but the human beings comes in all different size, shapes, and colors. So they're going to get what makes them feel. You know, I always wonder why come the lady next door, this is a scenario, had a poodle rather than a German Shepherd. Well, the poodle served a purpose just as well as a German Shepherd. It could hear what the normal human being couldn't hear, and it could sense what the normal human being couldn't sense. And most important of all, it was small and didn't eat a lot.
Well, have you seen a standard poodle? Have you seen the full-size poodles? They're huge. They're as big as German Shepherds.
Oh, yeah. That's an unusual case there.
They got the longest nose of any dog I've ever seen. You know, the poodle noses are huge. I don't know how we got onto poodle noses, but you know, they're huge. But they can—they probably have an amazing sense of smell. Well, they're French, so you know they have to go for the more artsy things. All right, my new favorite journalist, Emeril Robinson, who was—I saw her first on Newsmax, and she was on American News, and now she's independent. She's so independent, even the conservative news networks are too wimpy for her, which is kind of interesting. I'm trying to get her on the show, especially for our doctor panel, which will take place tomorrow at 10 o'clock in the morning Central Time. And so that's Pianki, have you had a chance to listen to any of our doctor panels the last 2 weeks? Because you've been fabulous.
No, I haven't.
All right, well, you get a chance.
I think what time your panel started? What time, 10?
Well, it's going to start 10 o'clock tomorrow. We do that for Judy on the West Coast because she's on the West Coast, so she's 2 hours behind us. I don't want to get her up at 5. you know, that's not fair. And so we get a respectable hour. And, of course, we have people from across the country. Brian Artis is in Texas somewhere. A couple of our folks around here in the Florida area, we've got Dr. Ben Marble, Dr. Jim Thorpe, Dr. Deborah Viglione. And so we have some you know, Florida docs. We got some Texas docs. We got a Texas doc and a California doc. And I'm not sure where John Cullen is. He's the guy that did the map on the Johns Hopkins COVID site. He's the data guy, so he's on the show. We got some other people too. It's going to be incredible. We got a couple of military folks tomorrow. It's going to be an amazing show. I got about 4 minutes left to talk general stuff. I don't want to play things I have been neglecting a little bit, which is our Santa Rosa Volunteers piece. And I have to make one today. I am so far behind on those. It's crazy because just so much is happening right here. The show is exploding. It really is. We've got some, like I said, we've got some new listeners in Zimbabwe and Indonesia. And I'm curious about Indonesia being a Muslim country. Really curious if we start writing laws in Muslim countries. Can you imagine people in Indonesia saying, "Yeah, I want to change the government." we have a new idea for a law. That would be fascinating. All right, Emeril Robinson's The Right Way. This is by subscription. She says Fulton County officials vote to certify election results without having any of the election results, which sounds pretty typical. All right, ex-Dominion employee has Fulton County recertified primary results in secret meeting. So if you wonder why Georgia has problems, you wonder why Kemp, I guess, won the primary over day. Same reason that everything screws up in Georgia. Vote fraud. This is from, I think, yesterday. She says, Georgia's primary elections have descended into chaos in Fulton County, which is Atlanta, and DeKalb County. I'm not sure where that is. She says, and Dominion voting system machines are at the center of both scandals. I would think by now, ever since the 2020 election, that every county that has voting machines would have gotten rid of them, especially Dominion voting machines, knowing they're connected to the internet. But no, they are still there. And here we have Emeril Robinson says, in fact, an ex-Dominion voting systems employee named Dominic Olomo appeared at an emergency election meeting. This is on a Sunday, so nobody would be there, right? In Fulton County to announce that discrepancies, quote unquote, in Dominion machines forced him to, quote, recertify the results of the primary election without having any vote totals to verify. Fulton County's election board required no numbers, no data, nothing to recertify their primary results. They just took the word of Dominic Olomo. Can you believe the stupidity on display here? She says, for more details, I've got more articles. She says, this is Banana Republic stuff. She says, let's begin at the beginning of this farce. Well, I'm not going to read that. This is more of the story. But basically, they're just making stuff up, like they usually do.
Well, if it works one time, why not again? It's just like a football team. End around, work every time against team. Let's run it 40 times. Yeah, that's right. I'm happy to hear that Zimbabwe is listening. You know, that was one of the countries, if I'm not mistaken, Zimbabwe and Mozambique, that Putin was on the ground to help ward off the influence of Western powers at that time. So, welcome aboard.
Well, that's Robert
Zimbabwe.
Mugabe. Wasn't Robert Mugabe the dictator of Zimbabwe for years and years?
He fought against the Rhodesian government. But Putin also played a part in some of their liberation, should I say, or prevent them from being brought back into recolonized, if I could say, too.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah, well, I don't think Zimbabwe or Rhodesia. Rhodesia was named for Cecil Rhodes, who was the British person. That's where the Rhodes Scholar comes from. Same guy. And so that's where Rhodesia was a British colony at one point. And I don't know if it was ever a Russian colony. And then they had their war for independence. And then I think Robert Mugabe they went from a colony to a dictatorship. This is not a good situation in Zimbabwe. But if anybody in Zimbabwe wants to call, we do have a Skype line. So just look at our broadcast page and you'll get the Skype line. You have to call in the day before so I can approve you. And once approved, you can call in anytime from then on. And that's how we've had calls. You know, we actually have had calls before the Skype line. We had one from Singapore. We had one from Beijing, China, which is really fascinating. And we never got another one from Beijing or Singapore. It's kind of Singapore probably because of the rates and Beijing probably because they cut it off. I'm sure the Chinese government that. All right. So let me hold up here. I've got more of these stories to do. Maybe we'll save them for tomorrow. And well, not for tomorrow, but for Friday. But yeah, so vote fraud is alive and well in America. Let me get your comment on that, Pianki, then I got to play a couple things.
Let's play. Let the music play, Greg.
Okay, and then I got our Trump announcement for the Trump birthday bash. I've got other things to play as well. Which one do I want to do today? Let's do anti-federalist number 11, and that'll set us up for federalist number 12. I've been reading federalist number 12. It's pretty disgusting. I love the anti-federalist papers much better. Be back in a little bit. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio with Founding Moments, insights into our founding documents, sponsored by Santa Rosa Volunteers here in Santa Rosa County, Florida. Santa Rosa Volunteers is available at their website, srv1776.com. That's srv1776.com. Anti-Federalist 11 was written under the pen name Agrippa, who was a Roman general under Emperor Augustus. Interesting choice. It is thought that Agrippa was James Winthrop from Cambridge, Massachusetts. This paper is actually an accumulation of excerpts from letters. So let me simply point out the highlights and develop a theme. The title under which this paper is recorded is Unrestricted Power Over Commerce Should Not Be Given the National Government. So let's focus on that primarily and leave out the other fluff that always accompanies these papers. Agrippa says, "It has been proved by indisputable evidence that power is not the grand principle of union among the parts of a very extensive empire. The common conclusion from this reasoning is an exceedingly unfair one, that we must then separate and form distinct confederacies. This would be true if there was no principle to substitute in the room of power. Fortunately, there is one. This is commerce. All the states have local advantages and in a considerable degree separate interests. They are, therefore, in a situation to supply each other's wants." If you read only the Federalist Papers, you will get one set of facts designed to lead you to only one conclusion, that without the Constitution, the country will fall into factions which will destroy the Union. However, when you read the Anti-Federalist Papers, all kinds of new information, evidence, arguments, and possibilities show up, which proves once again there are always other options. Agrippa then says, "The complaints of the deficiency of the congressional powers are confined to two articles. They are not able to raise a revenue by taxation, and they have not a complete regulation of the intercourse between us and foreigners. For each of these complaints, there is some foundation, but not enough to justify the clamor which has been raised." Whenever you hear intercourse, think commerce and trade, and it will all make sense. Agrippa is saying these are problems, but not enough problem to abandon the Articles of Confederation. Regarding the giving of power over all commerce to Congress and protecting the states, Agrippa says, "Three restrictions appear to me to be essentially necessary to preserve that equality of rights to the states, which it is the object of the state governments to secure to each citizen. First, it ought not to be in the power of Congress, either by treaty or otherwise, to alienate part of any state without the consent of the legislature. Second, they ought not to be able, by treaty or other law, to give any legal preference to one part above another. Third, they ought to be restrained from creating any monopolies." Agrippa counters the argument that the federal government has to standardize all commerce under the Commerce Clause, by stating that having the states retain some authority over interstate commerce wouldn't be much of a problem. He says, "The new Constitution not only prohibits vessels bound from one state to another from paying any duties, but even from entering and clearing. The only use of such a regulation is to keep each state in complete ignorance of its own resources. It certainly is no hardship to enter and clear at the custom house, and the expense is too small to be an object." Agrippa then says of the Constitution giving the feds all power over commerce, "The unlimited right to regulate trade includes the right of granting exclusive charters. There ought then to have been inserted a restraining clause which might prevent the Congress from making any such grant, because they can consequently defeat the trade of the outports and are also injurious to the general commerce by enhancing prices and destroying that rivalship which is the great stimulus to industry." Agrippa knew well the value of competition. In the concluding paragraph, Agrippa sums up his objections to taking all commerce power from the states and between the states. "There cannot be a doubt that, while the trade of this continent remains free, the activity of our countrymen will secure their full share. The credit of our merchants is, therefore, fully established in foreign countries. This is a sufficient proof that when business is unshackled, it will find out that channel which is most friendly to its course. We ought, therefore, to be exceedingly cautious about diverting or restraining it. Experience has shown that, instead of trying to lessen an evil by altering the present course of things, that every endeavor should have been applied to facilitate the course of law, and thus to encourage a mutual confidence among the citizens, which increases the resources of them all and renders easy the payment of debts. By this means, one does not grow rich at the expense of another, but all are benefited." And then Agrippa, in the last part, adds his analysis of human nature into the mix to again frame the argument against the Constitution. He says, "It is vain to tell us that we ought to overlook local interests. It is only by protecting local concerns that the interest of the whole is preserved. No man, when he enters into society, does it from a view to promote the good of others, but he does it for his own good. All men, having the same view, are bound equally to promote the welfare of the whole. To recur, then, to such a principle as that local interests must be disregarded is requiring of one man to do more than another and is subverting the foundation of a free government." In that last sentence, it's quite clear that not only giving Congress the power over all commerce subverts the independence and sovereign rights of the states, but the entire Constitution does, which is the main argument of all the anti-federalist papers against rushing into a completely new form of centralized federal government. Their choice is amending the Articles of Confederation to keep the independence of the states while giving the federal government a better range of defined powers for the good of all the people. The source for the Federalist Papers is federalistpapers.org. The Anti-Federalist Papers are from selfeducatedamerican.com. The Articles of Confederation are from usconstitution.net. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio with Founding Moments, sponsored by Santa Rosa Volunteers. Their website is srv1776.com. That's srv1776.com. Please share this report to anyone who needs it. This is Greg Penglis, host of Action Radio. Greetings, patriots from all across the panhandle and from the Gulf Shores of Alabama and Mississippi. In conjunction with the Escambia Federated Republican Women, the Gulf Coast Patriots is hosting a huge birthday celebration to honor President Trump. Saturday, June 11th, 11 a.m. to 4 p.m., the Ultra Mega Festival and Trump Birthday Party at the Santa Rosa County Fairgrounds, 8604 Bobby Brown Road in Milton, Florida. All conservative groups are specially invited. Bring your family and friends for fun and games, music, food, meet and greet the candidates, pony rides for the kiddies, show off your mega gear and America First swag. This is a tailgate-style event, so bring your chairs, tables, and tents. Come celebrate the birthday of the only person to be both the 45th and 46th president at the same time, our president, Donald Trump. Happy birthday, President Trump, and thank you for what you gave us. You gave us pride in our nation again. You made America First a goal that not only could be achieved, but was. Thank you for $1.85 gasoline and so much energy we could export it. Thank you for putting us on a level playing field with China. Thank you for not surrendering in Afghanistan and for trying to end the war there and everywhere we were involved. Thank you for not letting Russia invade Ukraine and North Korea for not testing nuclear missiles. Thank you for so many accomplishments when the entire Washington, D.C. deep state and the National Socialist media were against you. So let us just say now, happy birthday, Mr. President. See y'all at the party, Saturday, June 11th, 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. at the Santa Rosa County Fairgrounds. Here we go. Do you really want the truth? Do you have questions you can't ask in church? Welcome to the Oh My God Report. Wendy Arthur is more concerned with truth than propaganda, putting more value in scripture than religion, and more about you and your relationship with God than your membership in any church. This is Christianity with a Kick. Reality TV now presents Jesus was seen today in Jerusalem wandering around after the resurrection. Sorry, I had to do it. Sorry, Jesus.
That's right.
I'm making fun of you. Just having doing a little action radio thing here. Okay, fine.
Jesus
morning,
has
Wendy.
Not left the building.
Jesus has not left. That'd be a great thing to put on a church. Wouldn't that be amazing? You know, just imagine walking into that as you walk into church. Jesus has not left the building. See, you're good at this.
Well, good
can you imagine if you and I did a sermon in a church one day?
You're breaking up what?
I said, can you imagine if you and I did a sermon at a church one day? That would be hysterical.
I think that would be awesome.
Yeah, it'd be packed.
It would be packed. Well, we have to talk about that. That'd be a great topic. So as you're compiling your list of shows, I think we're up to about seven at this point. Humor, scriptural humor. You know, did Jesus have a sense of humor? You know, does God have a sense of humor? I think God has a sense of humor creating me for his own personal amusement, but that's just my story, and I'm sticking to it. But back to you, Wendy.
Oh, I think God has a great sense of humor myself. Yeah, Mike just got it. He says he makes God laugh all the time.
Exactly, yeah. Pianki, you had a quick comment, and then we'll get to Wendy.
No, it'd be a packed place, man.
There we go. We should do a roast show.
Good morning, Pianki.
Good morning to you.
We are going to talk about a very little known passage in Scripture that people don't tend to discuss, and I don't recall any pastor ever discussing from the pulpit, except for just maybe reading it as he's, you know, reading the passage and then going on to another point. So we're going to be discussing Matthew 27, verses 50 through 53 today. And it's extremely interesting. So we'll just delve right in since we only have a half hour. It says, and when Jesus had cried out again in a loud voice, he gave up his spirit. This is talking about the crucifixion, of course. At that moment, the curtain of the temple was torn in two from top to bottom. The earth shook, the rocks split, and the tombs were broken. Bodies of many holy people who had died were raised to life. They came out of the tombs after Jesus' resurrection and went into the holy city and appeared to many people. So we're going to look at the significance of this because, you know, we've talked about Jesus's resurrection and Easter and, you know, actually Resurrection Day and all that kind of stuff. But let's look at the significance of these holy ones that were raised back to life as well after the resurrection. So the temple veil was torn in two, and that was from top to bottom, not bottom to top. That's significant.
Okay.
It was extremely thick. It was heavy, heavy material, and it was very tall because it was in the temple, which was very, very tall ceilings in the temple. And only God could have torn it in two instantly.
Hmm.
So why would he do this? The veil in the temple, the temple had different places in it, and there was the holy place, which where everybody gathered, and then there was the Holy of Holies, where only the high priest went in, and that was once a year, and that was only after he had performed all the purification rituals, and he also had to tie a rope around his ankle, and if he missed even one thing in his purification, he would drop dead upon entering the Holy of Holies. And the priest would have to drag him out by the rope. That's why he tied a rope around his ankle.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Yes. So,
because no one else could go in there either. Yeah.
No, only the high priest, because only once a year could they say the name of God, and only the high priest knew the name of God. I mean, this is just it really, really lets you understand the depth of God's holiness and how powerful that is. So you couldn't have sin in your life, and you couldn't take it lightly and live. you had to go into the Holy of Holies, where God dwelt in that one part of the temple, was a monumental thing. So, and we'll go to get into the rest of that in just a second. So the tearing of the veil signified the blood of Jesus taking away the religious requirements and works to enter into the presence of God. And Jesus made it possible for all people to freely enter into his Father's presence and have a relationship with him, not just a designated few once a year. So we now have access to God all the time because of what Jesus did on the cross for us.
Mm-hmm.
And we can enter into his holiness through Jesus. That's the only way to enter into God's presence.
So that's a purification then. So in other words, instead of having a high priest purify themselves, Jesus purified all Christians.
Yes. Yeah, and it's open to everybody. You know, now you can reject what he did. You can reject the blood. You can reject the purification. But why?
Well, the only reason I said all Christians is because, you know, once you've accepted Jesus, that's sort of the definition of Christianity. So that's what, you know, but it's certainly open to all people. But the only reason I said, okay. Yeah. All right. Makes sense.
So the other point in this is the earthquake. When Jesus gave up the ghost, you know, there was an earthquake that split the rocks and broke open tombs. So what's the significance of that? Tombs back in the day, they were in caves for those who had money, or dug out of rocks by those who didn't. And scripture says that the bodies of many holy people came out of their tombs, you know, out of the rocks that were broke open. But let's look at when they came out. They came out of the tombs after Jesus' resurrection. Isn't that interesting that upon Jesus' death, the rocks were broke open? And it says that they came to life, but they did not exit the tomb until after Jesus was resurrected.
Did God resurrect anybody before Jesus?
No. They were at the time that Jesus, at the time of his death, they assumed that Jesus was dead. No, he was not. You know, it was his physical body died, his human body died, but his spirit was still alive and doing all kinds of things behind the scenes, and that's a whole different show. So,
about
what he did.
Put it on the list.
You know,
thought you wouldn't have anything to talk about. Exactly. We just keep making the list longer. You know, it's okay. Yeah. You'll be around for a while. We need you.
Yeah. So it says that the holy saints came out Not everyone who had died came out. Only the holy saints came out of the tombs after Jesus' resurrection, and they went into the holy city and appeared to many people. So the tombs broke open upon Jesus giving up his spirit at death on the cross, and then the holy saints didn't raise out of the tombs until after Jesus was resurrected and shown 3 days later. Jesus is the first fruits offering to God. And you have to understand Jewish culture at the time, that they had offerings for just about every season. They had major festivals throughout the year to remember and to honor different things and to make offerings. And the first fruits offering was at harvest time. So whatever crops that you grew, whatever herds that you had, you brought the very best out of that to give to God as a thanks offering for first fruits, for his goodness and his provision for you, that you even had a crop to, or a herd to offer something from. So Jesus was the first fruits offering to God himself. God presented Jesus to himself. As a first fruits offering.
Hence the term self-sacrifice, because in the old days they were sacrificing animals, but Jesus sacrificed himself.
Yes.
That's a huge change.
Exactly.
Okay.
It's huge because his blood was the only blood that was pure and without sin, and which was God's requirement. So when that happens and he gives us, and once you accept Jesus as your savior, then he gives you his righteousness. He exchanges your sin for his righteousness. Therefore, that gives you access to God at all times. So it's a big deal. So when the holy ones went, it says they went into the holy city, that's Jerusalem, and they appeared to many people. So why would God have them do that? Well, if you'll remember when we were talking about Easter, that the higher-ups, the Roman government and the Pharisees paid the guards a lot of money to say that his disciples had come and stolen the body. Remember that?
I don't remember, but it makes sense.
Okay, so because they didn't want anybody believing that he actually rose from the dead like he said he would.
Can't have that.
Yeah.
Thou shalt have no gods before government.
That's exactly right.
Yep.
And it still continues today.
Now, how about that?
Yes. So what happened was not only was Jesus raised, but these holy ones went into Jerusalem and they showed themselves to many people. And they told with their own mouths what they saw with their own eyes in the spirit realm because they were dead and they saw it. And now nobody can, all the families that buried them were there. Mm-hmm. Everybody knew they were dead. Now everybody is seeing them with their own eyes. And the stories, don't you know, they wanted to know everything. I'd be asking questions, okay, man, what'd you see? What was it like?
Oh, yeah, exactly. This is like Maury Povich and what's his name? Who's this is Geraldo Rivera. This is better than King Tut's tomb or the Titanic. This is good stuff, Hey, man, Jesus is here. What? You're kidding. No, he's here. Come on now. He's on the corner. Jesus is on the corner? Really? He's dead. No, he's not. He's here. Sorry. But which leads to a serious question. Not that we do a lot of serious things. Actually, we do a lot of serious things intermixed with a little comedy. Now, did Jesus appear as a flesh and bone body, or did Jesus appear as a spirit that was as lifelike as a person but not a person because his body had already died, but his spirit hadn't?
He had his glorified body at that point. He looked like everybody else. He looked like the Jesus that they knew, but it was glorified, as in, doors and walls meant nothing. Yeah.
Okay. Was there an aura? Was like a visible aura? A glow or something distinguishing?
No, he just looked like any other person, but he didn't look the same to his disciples, which I thought was really interesting, which is a whole different scripture. So let's get to this one first.
Yeah, let's do that. This is great.
So as these holy ones, these holy saints that have been resurrected from the dead, come and start telling everybody, their what they saw, what they experienced, what people can expect, you know, when it's their turn to die, because they told them, look, heaven and hell are real places, man, and you've got a choice to make.
Yeah, exactly.
Make the right one. We know.
Yeah, take your number now, folks. Don't wait too long.
Bow now, avoid the rush.
Yeah, that's it. That's what it was, yeah.
You know, but people can refute and deny the truth of the scriptures all day long, and mm-hmm. you see it every day. But they cannot refute your personal experience and your own testimony. That's yours. That was your experience, and that's yours to tell, and nobody can refute that. So it was
well, especially
really
when it's a common experience.
That,
you know, this is more than one person.
Yes.
This isn't just one person saying, "I saw Jesus." You know, this is many people. And I'm gonna ask the question: why this was important in God's plan? I'm curious about that. I mean, I can see it. You know, but there's probably more to it than I'm seeing initially. But you know, because God doesn't. You know, if you believe in God, and you believe that God can create miracles and can resurrect people, then you wouldn't have to see Jesus to know that God could do this. However,
right.
was this for the people that didn't, you know, hadn't known Jesus, hadn't accepted
yes.
God? Okay.
Yes, because you know, you have to remember, like, back in the day when the Pharisees, mm-hmm. you know, were in charge of everything, there were 613 laws that they were putting on the backs of the people that they themselves did not follow.
Oh, Congress.
And yeah, exactly. And so Jesus was like, you know what? Enough is enough.
Yeah. Yeah.
I want freedom for all men, you know, mm-hmm. all people. I want them to be walking in freedom, and they shouldn't. It's not about works. And yeah, because no matter what you do, no matter how good you think you are, you ain't Jesus good. So, and that's the standard that God set, you know, Jesus good.
Well, no, this is really important. I think I don't want to shortchange this because, you know, there's a lot of people who believe, and I did for a long time too, and I'm still partially, you know, that if you lead a good life and you do good work, you know, that's enough to get you into heaven, you know, when the judgment comes. And what you're saying is that's not enough. You know, you have to, you know,
yeah.
accept Jesus as your savior. You have to, you know, then this is a different thing for a lot of people. And this is why this is a very important point.
It is.
Yeah.
It is an important point, you know, because it's if you make it about how good you are, then you're making it about you and you make yourself your own savior.
Oh, okay. That makes sense.
See, and then.
So in other words, you're judging that your work is good.
Unnecessary if that was all
right.
that was required.
Yeah. So in other words, so you're the one who's deciding that your work is good enough as opposed to God deciding.
Yeah.
Okay. Got
exactly.
it.
Exactly. Yeah. So, you know, and to your point, if you asked 100 people how they came to know Jesus as their Savior, you would hear 100 different testimonies
mm-hmm.
because none would have the same, you know, testimony because Jesus is a personal God and he meets you exactly where you're at. No matter what condition or circumstances you're in, he meets you wherever you're at. And everybody has their own life and their own walk and their own story to tell because
mm-hmm.
they were in whatever circumstances, you know, or condition they were in at the time. So God isn't into cookie cutter Christians. You know, it's not like
we need that on bumper sticker, Wendy. That's perfect. we'll put that under Jesus hasn't left the building.
But it's true, you know, because God is an individual God. He created you as an individual. He created me as an individual. He created everyone differently because it was his pleasure to do so.
Mm-hmm.
So he likes that you're different than everyone else. He likes that you have a different set of fingerprints than everybody else. He loves individuality. And
that goes
so,
to free will.
That's
like the perfect explanation for free will. Because
exactly.
from individuality leads to free will.
Yes. And
okay.
he is pleased with that. So, you know, if you don't look like somebody else or dress like somebody else or act like somebody else, God's good with that.
I must be really happy with me then.
Yes.
I don't do anything like anybody else. Thanks,
well,
God. Appreciate
Greg,
the help.
You are unicue. This is true.
I don't know if the planet's ready for two of me. One of me's plenty.
Well, yeah, two of them aren't necessary.
Besides,
exactly. If two people were exactly the same, one of them isn't necessary. So
that's true. That makes a lot. Yeah, absolutely.
has.
Well, you're
their
full
own
of. You,
call,
we could do a whole bumper sticker, you know, market on everything you've said today. This is great.
You know, Christian commerce. There you go.
Exactly.
It's just important to know that wherever you are, however you are, you don't have. There isn't a formula to get to Jesus. Just
right.
Call on him.
Yeah.
And wherever you are, he'll come and meet you. I mean, if you're truly serious about him and wanting to know him, he will reveal himself to you. It's just important that we understand that there are reasons for everything you have gone through, and you may not know them now, and you may be in a really, really dark place, and you just can't see to the other side.
Been there.
But,
yeah.
You know, yes, you have, and many people have, and many people are in that place right now. So those of us who have crossed over to the other side of that darkness, we want to speak to those in the darkness and just hopelessness right now. Hopelessness is taking over so many people. Do not give up your hope. Jesus is your hope. Call out to him, and he will get you to the other side. That's a promise I can make you.
It's interesting because I never gave up hope. As deep as my depression was, I never gave up hope. I never wanted to hurt myself or do anything like that. I never wanted to become addicted to something. I never wanted to escape from it. I knew I had to work through the process, and it took a couple of years with the help of some amazing people. Not counselors, by the way. I'm just talking about amazing people.
Yeah.
you never know who your teachers are going to be, and that's what makes life so fascinating. But that process. And this is why I'm so against antidepressants and medication and things like that, and we should talk about this sometime too, because you have to work through the process. And I knew I had to work through the process, and it was painful as hell. You know, I describe depression as walking neck deep in molasses. You can't move. And I've heard this described as, as the body's way of it's probably God's way too, of shutting you down, making you deal with things that you have to face. And once you face them, and once you've worked through this process, it'll free you up for the rest of your life. And that's what it did for me. So there was a freeing process. It came out of the tunnel. I saw the light. You know, here I am. I had my purpose. I had my dedication. I had everything I needed. I just had to once that's done, once you know, you've met God and you've got this going, from there you can excel. And this is why there's never been any doubt in my mind about Action Radio. I mean, none. You know, despite the fact of being bankrupt and everything else, I don't care, because I know this is going to work, and it's working better than ever all the time.
Right.
So whatever the timing is now, you know, especially with our doctor show tomorrow, with our amazing doctor panels and the things that are happening, you know, have faith. And I literally mean this, have faith, but have faith, you know, do the work. You've got to do the work. And you know, Jesus walked what, for how long in the desert? You know, he had to do the work. Even Jesus had to do the work. So don't think that you don't have to do the work. You got to do the work. But you got to have the faith and the work. And you combine the faith and the work, and you're pretty much unstoppable. Well, thank you.
It's true.
I didn't plan that. It just kind of happened. Yeah.
Look, just know that you have a purpose. Everyone has a purpose. And today, no matter how dark it seems, no matter how suffocating it seems, today is only today. Today is not forever. So if anyone out there is really struggling with thoughts of ending things, don't make a permanent decision on a temporary situation.
Yeah.
Everything is temporary. Every storm will pass. So I'm asking you that if you do need some help, reach out to Action Radio for some resources.
We should give you your contact
reach out
information.
To me, reach out to,
listen,
to
yeah,
a local agency, reach out
yeah,
to
listen.
A friend, reach out to a stranger who's willing to listen, but reach out.
Yeah.
And most of all, call on Jesus.
And let's get your ministry contact information if people want to talk to you. We should do this every time anyway.
You go to the Dimensions Ministries page on Facebook and message me, or message me on Wendy Arthur on Facebook. Message me. I will be glad to listen and point you in the right direction, but just know it's going to include Jesus, because that's the only permanent solution.
That's part of the deal.
And,
yeah.
It's part of the deal if you're going to reach out. But I'm telling you, this is not the end of your days. it's going to get dark for in the world for a while, but you don't have to be hopeless in it, and you don't have to be in fear. So it's a good day.
Absolutely. You know, I came up with one of my you know, Gregisms you get to write the chapters of your life, not the ending. You know, God will determine the ending. But you get to write, but write interesting chapters. I mean, it doesn't mean, you know, don't have adventures. I mean, lead an active, adventurous life. But write the chapters, not the end. And so I think that that kind of sat with me pretty well. Yeah, we have about 5 minutes. Chancey's actually on the line too, so I'm going to bring her on in a couple minutes to let you guys interact a little bit. But so what was the result of this? So the fact that so people, you know, was there immediate at the time? Was this event covered? Was it talked about in the churches? Was the Jewish population, population saying things? What's the buzz? Tell me what's happening from Jesus Christ Superstar.
This is my rule of thumb. If Scripture doesn't expound on it, I'm not going to. This was a short passage, as you can tell, that mm-hmm. had a whole lot of impact in the world that it was going on in at the time, because I'm telling you, if somebody that was dead came and showed themselves to me and we had a conversation,
don't
you know I'd be talking about it?
I'd be talking about it. Well, listen, if you're talking about it,
I'd
be talking
about it.
You're
not going to believe who I saw today.
So Jesus is walking down the street wearing a Hawaiian shirt and sunglasses. It was really kind of fascinating. He was on the way to the beach, had an umbrella the whole bit. Yeah. Well, so let's get one more, and then we'll get Pianchi and Chansey. So the purpose of this was what? What was the
purpose of Jesus being raised is, you know, we've already discussed a whole bunch of
But
the whole part about the holy ones being seen was to let them know that, look, there is an afterlife. And only your body dies. Yeah, I want to make that point. Only your mm-hmm. body dies. Your soul and your spirit are eternal.
Mm-hmm.
So what people don't tend to realize, and I haven't heard anybody really preach on this, mm-hmm. is that those who reject Christ and his work on the cross for them go to a place that was never made for them. They will go to hell, and that was never made for man. That was made for Satan and his angels who betrayed God in heaven. That's who hell was made for. But because there's only two places, it's by default, that's where you go if you're going to reject Christ and heaven and the way to God the Father. But your soul and your body do not change. You will remain in a mortal body forever. And I know that's a contradiction, but the body that you have will not be a glorified body. It will not turn into a spirit body. It will remain that's how, and when it talks about you will feel the flames on your body as if you were caught in a fire today. You will feel maggots eating on you. You will feel your insides being eaten by worms. You will feel all of that, but for eternity, because it never ends. And your soul will feel the same anguish that forever. And that I can't even wrap my mind about that kind of torment. But in heaven, we get, if you are a follower of Christ and you've accepted him and you're giving your life to him, then you get a glorified body. You'll be able to see your body, but you aren't limited by anything. You can go through walls. You can, you know, think about being in a place and you're there. I mean, it's just, you can transport at will. And everything's perfect. You don't have pain anymore. You don't have maladies anymore. There is no anything bad anymore. You are in total joy forever. So, and nothing hurts. I mean, I'm looking forward to that day when nothing hurts.
Well, I'm looking forward to it because I got work to do, but it's one way to get over to a fear of death. You know, I mean, I got over a fear of death realizing that there is a difference between your body and your spirit. And the older I get, the more I realize what a difference that is. Having gone through open heart surgery, my body was dead for 4 hours. There was no heartbeat. There was no lung action. There was nothing. Clinically, I was dead.
Right.
And then they jump started me back in, which I really appreciate. But the point is, my spirit, you know, but my spirit didn't die. Yeah, my spirit's still there. Now, I didn't get the out-of-body experience. I didn't look down at the doctors and go, oh, nice job. Well, that's what my insides look like. I didn't have that experience. I mean, there was nothing. I don't remember anything about it. But the point was, obviously, my spirit didn't die or I wouldn't have come back. So here I am.
Correct.
Which is kind of fascinating. So once you go through an experience like that, that kind of opens up your eyes too. So that's just quite interesting. Let me get Chansey here, and then because we're going to have Michael in the top of the hour, and if she's a comment for you, and of course Bianca, you're welcome to comment as well. Chansey, what do you think of this so far? You got a comment or question for Wendy?
No, I'm loving it.
Good
morning. How are y'all? Good morning. Oh, yeah, it's a beautiful day to be alive for sure. But depression is, that was, it's part of what I'll be talking to, you know, it cued something that I can add to what I wanted to talk about today as well, because it's just everywhere. It's everywhere. So.
Sounds like a busy day. Okay. Bianca, do you have a last comment for Wendy? And Wendy, you're welcome to stay, but if you have to go, that's, I understand. But I'm glad we got you. We should do your contact stuff more if there's anything else you want to add. Bianca, you got a last question for Wendy or a comment?
Oh, I'm just amazed. Wendy always comes in and just tear the house down.
Well, she actually was on earlier in our shows and took a break for a while. And so if you want to scroll back, you know, Wednesdays it was, you know, we had the Oh My God reports going back, I think, all the beginning of the show back in 2018. Do you remember when you started, Wendy? It's way back.
Well, we started with the art report first, and then we went on to the Oh My God report.
Oh, so, you want to hear the theme? No, I'm not going to play the theme.
Oh, Lord, no. Spare the audience.
But it's such
a
good theme.
Bianchi and Chansey, I bless you in your days today and listening to your report, Chansey. And Bianchi, it's always a pleasure talking to you, man. You're awesome. And Greg, thank you for the opportunity. And thanks for having me back.
Oh, I love having you back. Yes. Are you kidding? You're always welcome.
Thank you, Wendy.
All right.
Be careful.
let's get to Chansey. What is health? What does it take to stay healthy? We have a longer lifespan than 100 years ago, but is the quality of life any better? 100 years ago, their food was better. They got more exercise. They weren't as fat. They didn't have preservatives, antidepressants, sugar in everything, and they didn't have vaccines. If you talk about alternative healthcare, people think of crystals, incense, strange candles, crystal balls, Ouija boards, notions, potions, lotions, and total hippies telling you to detox, man. So let's change our system of sick care into wellness. Let's get healthy. Let's lower our stress, stop taking in poisons, eat and drink organic, clean food, and let's have a chat with Chansey Terry, because this is Wine, Weed, and Wellness Wednesday. Yeah, since I mentioned Wednesday, the theme's kind of stuck here, Chansey.
Hey, that's good. I like it.
Yeah, that seems long enough. It's almost like a whole report in itself. I think I started off 30
seconds.
Then I kind of developed it from there.
Yeah.
So what's going on? What's happening?
Oh, goodness. So much. It's good to be here. Thank you for having me today.
Oh,
and
you're welcome.
I wanted to – it's funny, not funny, but I dealt with some – very close friends this past weekend that are going through exactly what you were talking about. They've been to two or three doctors. Nobody can find anything wrong with them, but they can't move. They can't get out of bed. They can't, they're dropping things. Their vision is blurred. Their heart is like, they don't have a headache, but there's pressure in their head. And I'm like, you're depressed. They went through they called off their wedding, maybe a month before their wedding, and one saying, I'm completely fine, it's okay, and that's the one that's like breaking down because they're trying to tell their body that they didn't just go through a death. So I was physically there for it, so it's not interesting as in, getting to experience that for a friend is sad, but seeing it firsthand, like knowing that they did blood work, knowing that they did EKG, knowing that they did all this, and the body is fine. It's the soul. It's the spirit. It's the heart. It's hurting. It's literally crying out for you to just sit down and rest and be and go through some stuff, like you said. Yeah.
Yep,
but,
exactly.
A 25-year-old with a factory job sometimes can't do that. So it shows you how, programmed society is, that when you're going through something like that, you're supposed to just push through if you don't have a doctor's excuse. You know, well, there's nothing wrong with you because doctors know everything. And if a doctor hasn't said something's wrong, you know, and so it'd be like, you know, can I write you a prescription? Because I think you need some CBD and you need to get outside and you need to be barefooted and you need to sleep for 3 days. But that's not going
to
go over well.
Watch the waves.
Yeah, go to the, you know, yeah. And we even did, like, it was interesting to see. Yes, it was interesting to see, like, he hung around us friends for a little bit, and we talked dirt bikes, and we were out in the, you know, nighttime air, and he improved, like, 40%. But then when mm-hmm. he left and he went home, he got worse, you know, because when you sit, you know, you go home, and that's where you get to think, and your mind starts, you know, telling you everything that's going on, even if you don't mean to. So that's where meditation and mindfulness is so important, because you can, not if you're on that brink of, like, I want to end my life and I want to, you know, I don't want to be here anymore. But if you're having those moments of here and there, like, what is wrong with me? Like, I'm fine and then I'm not. That's where you can hone in on your self-care and maybe take some supplements that boost brain health, or take some CBD that lowers the inflammation in your body, or get outside and get in the waves, do something, like, you know, reach out to a friend, like Wendy said. But a lot of them don't want to reach out. Like, it took him a long time to ask me. He was like, you think CBD will help me? Like, the doctors are saying that nothing, you know, nothing's wrong, and I know something's wrong. And I was like, yeah. And so he took some CBD and he was better within 2 hours, but then it wears off, you know? So it's like, you know, it's one of those things to where, like, it's sad that holistic care is your last resort because it's not covered by insurance and it's not spoke about enough.
We need to change
that.
It makes
you look woo-woo. I know. And
we have a major bill to it. Just to jump in here for a second, do you think, as I do, that, and you don't have to, but I see depression and suicide as two different things. They're not, I mean, they can lead from one to the other, but depression really is a warning, is a procedure, is a work assignment.
Yeah.
You know, and suicide is
not
an ending.
A disease. Yes. Uh-huh. Yeah. That's the thing, is they lead to each other. Yeah. And so depression is not a disease. It's disease in the body, but it's not a diagnosis of, like, well, you've got this and you'll always have this, which is mm-hmm. what a lot of society likes to attach to. Well, I've got depression,
medicine.
So I...
There's profit in it.
Yeah. Right. And then that person who's been told that they have depression, it's in our nature to sometimes use it as an excuse. Well, I'm depressed. I can't take care of my kids. I'm depressed. I can't go to Walmart and buy groceries. I can't, you know, and that is true to some degree, but it is not who you are. It is what you are going through right now. Like Wendy said, it's today. It's not tomorrow. It's up to you to choose it for tomorrow. But once you're in that deep, deep state, it is harder to see another option. Yeah. So going back to what I really wanted to talk about today was relationships. And mm-hmm. the food that you're eating. So, but I know that someone, and so, like, we can go further into guns and weapons because we also need guns.
Oh, my gun
out.
Care? This is my new philosophy, gun care. You know,
yeah,
safe and effective firearms. You know, and I asked Bianca the same question. I'll ask you real quick, and then we get into relationships.
Yeah.
But,
no,
you know, what do you think is safe and effective, an AR-15 or a COVID shot?
Oh, gosh, say AR-15.
Exactly.
AR-15 every day, even without bullets in it, an AR-15 is better than a shot because I can hit you with it or I can, like, knock you out with it at least. It's
well,
still safe
and also,
effective.
The AR-15 works as intended. You know, the COVID shot will kill when used as directed. So,
exactly. Even if the gun jams. Yeah, even if the gun jams and I have to throw it at you and it fails to do its safety, I would take it every time.
Well, even if it jams, not firing is part of the safety. You know, you have to clear it so that it's functioning again. We got to get you out to the gun range. We have a new one opening up in Milton.
Yeah.
We're going to get you out shooting. Yeah.
Oh, nice. I love it. Yeah. I am left-handed, and so I love shooting because it's I had to learn weirdly because I learned from somebody that was right-handed. So I was closing my left eye and shooting with my left hand. Yeah, and so I was like, why am I not hitting anything? Yeah, so anyways, but I love to shoot.
Both
and,
eyes open, but we have a new place called Sandy Brown here
just
in Milton.
Saying,
and,
yeah,
I'll get them on the show.
When I was starting. Okay. Yeah.
Well, yeah.
And then the thing about the guns is that my main opinion about guns is that I don't think you should have one if you don't know how to shoot it. So I do feel there needs to be regulations on, like, no, you I don't know how it is in Florida because I haven't had to buy a gun in Florida. But in Alabama, I could go to Woods and Water and buy a gun before I got my permit. And I'm like, well, why wouldn't I need my permit to prove that I've passed a background check to buy a gun? So it was so backwards, where I also feel like you should have to prove that you can shoot the gun before you can buy the gun. And so if that was, and that might not be everybody's opinion, but I just feel like that's where we go wrong, is like, even if it's just some like online course or something, you have to do that before you can get a boating license. Like you can't drive a boat.
Yeah, but we don't license gun owners. We don't need government permission. See, this difference between a right and what a government regulated thing like driving, which I disagree with the driver's license.
Right.
But here's the argument against that.
Yeah.
If the government does that, what the government regulates, what the government controls, the government can restrict. And so they can say, well, you haven't passed training, or they make it expensive,
right,
or they do all kinds of other things.
Yeah.
So you don't want to do that. Now, here's the thing, though.
No.
You want to look to people,
some other kind of thing.
Right,
but, yeah.
But if you just understand, that's the wrong word. But the fact that if you look to people first rather than government first, see, we have a natural instinct to look to government first. Now, that's something that I want to change. I look to people first. What would a responsible person do? Well, they'd get a lesson,
mm-hmm.
or they'd learn from their parent, or they'd learn from a family member, or they'd go to a police course, and because we have like civilian something training here, and firearm training.
Right.
There's
right.
all these other things that
right.
you can do. The vast majority of people do learn how to use a firearm before purchasing one. So that's not really a problem. Jackie?
What it should be is that until you prove that you shouldn't own one, you should.
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah, that's a good one. Yeah, I like that. But I also, I don't know, I guess I just don't trust people enough. So, like, I've just seen a lot of idiots, and I've had a lot of girlfriends who have a pink gun in their purse, and they've never shot it. And I'm like,
well,
you're going to get shot in the face when you pull that thing out and you don't know how to shoot it. So I guess my experiences have been
not necessarily.
We'll get off the gun thing because it could go for a whole hour because I do not agree. But, we can keep going. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
For sure. But if you want to talk about guns,
you ever walk out in traffic to get to the yellow line? And cars is coming on either side of you. Well, I sure hope they know how to drive.
Yeah.
Yeah, most people don't know how to drive. They don't have enough lessons to get a license.
No, they don't.
15,
no.
And they're never checked again. Yeah, see, I'm for recurring driving lessons, but that's another story. All right,
I am too. And that's
okay.
Right, because that's what I was going to say.
But if gun stores offered, first-time gun buyers a lesson, there's a solution to it. If people sought out lessons, there's a solution to it. If gun ranges had a discount or an introductory lesson for first-time gun owners, that would help it. So the last thing I want to say on this real quickly before we get on is that look to people. Look to private solutions first. What the government regulates, the government controls, the government destroys. And so those are the last people I want to mandate a test, because we can fix this problem, whatever problem there is. All right. Tell me about relationships
with food.
Well,
yeah, you just said
it. I'm dying of curiosity. Yeah.
You just said it. Like, I don't care about the government. The government wasn't even in my thought process. But anyways, if you're eating shit and you're in a bad relationship, then that's probably why. So, like, if you're putting bad things in your body and you're trying to make your relationship work, that's more than likely why the relationship isn't working. And so you have these couples who one person is doing the work and the other one isn't, and they don't even see it as work. So, for an example, one person drinks a smoothie every morning, they drink water all day, they eat pretty clean throughout the day, and then the other person is going to McDonald's, Hardee's, they're drinking Diet Dr. Pepper, they're doing all the things, and then they come home, and they're like, I don't know what's going on. Like, I don't want to talk to you, I don't want to see you, I don't want to, like, why is this happening? When we were in love 5 years ago, when we met in high school or whatever. So if someone starts doing more work and the other one isn't, your frequency is completely off because you're not real. So if you're putting processed food inside of your body and your body's having to constantly process food, it can't process emotion. So you get an argument with this kind of couple, and one is very in touch with their emotions. One knows like why they feel sad or what the difference between mad and broken is, or what the difference between emotions are. Like, some people just think you know, they have like five emotions in their toolbox, and others have like, well, I am, you know, digressed, or I, you know, they can, their vocabulary of emotion is completely different.
Hmm.
So if you're dealing with someone who doesn't have that same capacity to understand what you're going through, that you're not pissed at them, you're just upset at a situation that's going on right now. Well, then that turns into that person thinks you're mad, so they act like they would if they thought you were mad at them, and you're over here like, I'm not mad at you. So it's because one's doing the work and one isn't. So when you do this whole, like, relationship therapy and counseling, if you're not addressing food, it's not good. I mean, you may get 70%, 60%, but you're not going to get to that top tier of, oh my gosh, I get it. You know, like, we're both eating clean, we're both not putting synthetic deodorant on every day, we're not, that was like one of the key things that stood out, was that one woman was looking for a mate and she keeps meeting these men, and she mentioned how good that one of them smelled, but she didn't find him attractive. And I'm like, yeah, because it was synthetic cologne, and you use essential oils, and you use all natural products. So when you smelt him, it smelled good, but it wasn't real. And so you couldn't get past that synthetic fake barrier that was consuming that person. So if, and that's fine for that guy and that's fine for that girl. But when you start looking at what am I doing versus what are they doing? What environment are they living in versus what environment am I living in? And if it's completely off, it's not going to work. And so when you go to try to find these people, you go to bars, or you go to, you know, maybe you go to a church to find people, but, and you may click then, but then y'all date for a while and he's doing his thing and you're doing, and she's doing her thing. And then they don't talk about their diet until they maybe even move in with each other, possibly. Or like maybe you go out to eat and you notice one person gets a salad, the other person gets a cheeseburger and fries, and you think nothing about it. But it's like, not that you have to be on the same wavelength all the time, but there needs to be a discussion about what do you put in your body. Do you take supplements? You know, have you had blood work done? What is your vitamin D? And we're not talking about that. And it's insane at the people that get on my table and talk about relationships and talk about how their marriage is failing or like whatever. And then I just, I don't know, I guess it's God. It brings up something. I'm like, well, do y'all grocery shop together or what? And one will be like, oh gosh, no, he eats like crap. He goes to the drive-thru every day. Or it'll be him talking about her. No, she hardly eats. She eats like a bird. She never eats anything because she's worried about her weight. And I'm like, well, of course, your brain's not working. Your brain doesn't have the nutrients that it needs to process what might could happen if you stayed together or you left each other. So I think there needs to be counseling for that.
Your emotions is what you're saying. You know, is this
yes.
a whole new concept.
Yes.
This is fascinating. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Huh.
And what are you feeding them? And so we can go to any relationship, like your work environment. You always work with these people. You think they're the greatest people ever. And then you start becoming best friends with one of the girls or one of the guys or whatever. And then you start doing that. Like y'all get into a tiny little disagreement. Maybe something happens. You don't text them back and they go off the deep end. They lose it. And you're like, whoa, wait a minute. What happened? If you look at their diet, if you look at their in, on, and around, it'll probably tell you why. Like, again, it's all based off of personal experience. I have a best friend who has completely disowned half of her friends. Well, she's toxic. She's eating like crap. She's in a nursing environment where she works in the ER. She gets zero sleep. She's living in a home where there's candles and scentsies, and they spray Lysol everywhere because she goes to the ER. So she's been in it for so long that she doesn't even realize it's changed her whole dynamic. Like she's not sleeping. There's probably mold in her house. So I can forgive and forget, but that doesn't mean that I have to allow her in my life until she's done something with her toxicity, which is just like she doesn't need to allow, you know. So we have to look at things like that. Like, why is my somebody that I've known for so long all of a sudden like they can't handle their emotions? And then that's where depression happens, because nobody can see it. They're like, well, she's fine. Nothing's happened. Like, she hasn't had a death. She hasn't.
Oh, you can be functional and depressed.
Okay.
There are millions
yeah,
of functionally
totally.
Depressed people out there.
Totally.
They just
totally.
Unmedicated. Yeah.
Yes.
You can still do things,
and that's another thing,
but,
medicine.
right. Yep.
Yeah.
Well, let's get into that.
No,
yeah.
And that's it. Like, yeah, like, what are they taking? And nothing against that, but, like, say you start talking to somebody or you've got a friend that has high blood pressure. Their doctors have put them on high blood pressure medicine. Well, it's going to keep them at a low rate all the time. So, you know, it's keeping their heart from killing them, which is a good thing, but you have to take that into effect that they're taking a synthetic medicine, and it's in their body. And then if you're over here, so what I run into, and it was like, maybe the last 3 years of my career I ran into, I was constantly detoxing from all the people that I had been touching with their synthetic stuff. So I can massage someone and smell detergent. I can massage someone and smell their deodorant. I can massage someone and smell their shampoo, their hairspray, their body wash. So all that comes out when you're messing with lymph and blood flow. So then here I am putting essential oils on my body every day, which are detox. That's what they do. They go in and they find the bad and they get rid of it. And so I would go home with a headache or feel like crap or like why is the stomach ache, and it, you start paying attention to your clients and you start paying attention to that and you realize, oh, that's what's happening. Then it happened in my personal relationship where my husband worked in a very toxic chemical environment and he was coming home to a diffuser, you know, and clean environment, and so he was detoxing. So it would be like that little snap of like saying something, I'm like, why'd you just say that? And he doesn't know. And he's looking at me like, where'd that come from? You know, and I'm like, because you're detoxing. So if you give your body time to release those things, and there's ways to do that with grounding and making sure that you do use like something clean on your body every day. But unfortunately, those people who do that a lot, we are going to have more episodes of reality. So if we're constantly in syntheticness and we never step out of that, you don't see the difference. But if you're in one environment and then you go into another environment, you're going to see that. So that's where, like, some of us hippie woo-woo people get looked at weird.
I like hippie people. I'm a nerd warrior. Yeah. So how much is there like I'm sure it's different for every person, but people really need, if you're in a toxic work environment, and I would include fluorescent lights, bad air, too much electronics, all the things that go on, the pressure of meetings and all the stuff like that. So really, for most jobs, you know, you have to, this is why I'm so glad I have this job. I don't detox, this is my passion. I don't detox from action radio. But people, for most jobs, especially because most people don't like their jobs, they do them because they have to, which is too bad too. That's another crisis. That's another show.
Right.
But so you know, spouses get together, you know, after day of work, or one works and one works at home, or whatever the combination is. Someone comes in from a toxic environment, you know, half an hour, 45 minutes, go get some food, you know, have an apple, have a pear, you know, sit around for a while, you know, eat some fish, you know, you'll feel better. Then we'll talk kind of thing. So people really need detox time every day, don't they, from work? If it's
every
not a
day.
Situation.
And that's, every day. And so personally, I've just started doing it more because we're able to. But like, example, like I will wait outside by the water for my husband to get home because it's usually within 30 minutes of me getting home. And then we meet each other outside in the fresh air, and then we walk into our home. So that's just one little thing that you could do, even with your kids or whatever. Like, what happens is, like, you go into the home, you've set up your whole thing, you start doing what you're doing, and then your significant other comes into the home with all their baggage, with all their stuff, you know, and you're like, well, I've had time to decompress because I've been home for 30 minutes. But now you're coming in, and I need to appreciate that. I need to, you know, recognize that. So either you do that, you know, you just recognize, hey, you know, I'm home first, so let me set up an environment that makes it easy for this next person to come home, whether it be your children, your roommates, whatever, and then go from there. And then the number one key is that whoever lives in, like, if someone works in, like, a chemically toxic environment, they need to take a shower. And that's, you know, some people do, some people don't. Some people, you know, I'll take a shower in the morning, or I'll take a shower after dinner. No, when they come in the home, they need to take those clothes off, and they need to go take a shower, because you're going to snuggle up on the couch, or you're going to sit beside each other at dinner, or you're going to, you know, whatever. And it's all about toxicity. What is your total toxic load? And some people can handle it, but if you're going through something, say your mom is sick or someone's in the hospital, and then you add toxins and you add this and you add that, it's a storm of chaos. And then nothing is to blame. Like, there's no, well, what am I blaming? I don't know who to blame. And it's nothing. It's a compilation of everything that you're allowing in your life. It's taking control of your environment, which isn't always fun.
Yeah. Oh, no. Have you ever made a toxic checklist where you'll have, you know, soaps, deodorants, food, categories, fried food, different things, food groups, nutrition, supplements, all that, you know, essential oils. Mm-hmm. Do you have do you have one of those, like a toxic checklist?
I don't. I mean, I do, but I don't. You know, like they change every time. But like when someone comes to me with something, I have to break down and ask them, what are you putting on your skin? Number one. And I guess just because that's my career, skin.
Right.
So I'll ask them about their body wash, their shampoo. Do they have candles and do they have scentsy? You know, what's in your home environment of your skin? And they'll look at me like, what? And I'm like, yeah, like your shampoo that runs down your back into your crack. Like all the things that are touching your body, that's important. And then you want to wonder, and so that's where I start. And then the next is like, are you supplementing? And then after that, it's like, well, what are you supplementing with? Is that full of crap and processed stuff? Are you getting it at Walmart? And then after that, it goes to food. So food is very, very important, but that's, I think, where we don't want to look at the other things. We don't want to look at, well, yeah, I eat vegan and I eat, you know, and I do all these things and I should be healthy, because that, again, in my opinion, is not healthy. But you think you're doing right and then you're still putting on Bath and Body Works lotion or using, some strong hand sanitizer every 2 minutes, and you wonder why your microbiome, your frequency that you're emitting is not good. Yeah.
You know, it's interesting, whether it's deodorant or shampoo or any number of other products, propylene glycol and sodium lauryl sulfate seem to be in everything. Do you know what those are?
Yes.
I have no idea.
Yes. Well, antifreeze. Propylene glycol is antifreeze. And
that's
so you're
glycol.
Putting antifreeze. Yeah.
That's ethylene glycol.
What'd you say?
It's almost the same.
Well, it's almost the same as what I tell people. I'm like, you're basically stripping your body of all the oils that it naturally makes. You know? And so, yeah, I don't know. And I know good and well, just like Big Pharma, they're all involved. It's like, how can we cause cancer slowly?
Well, it's petrochemical. Glycol and ethylene glycol, those are part of organic chemicals. Those come from oil.
Yes. Uh-huh.
Okay. Now the other one's a salt, I believe. Sodium lauryl sulfate, I think, is a salt. Because it got sodium and sulfate.
Again,
it's like
dehydrating.
A sulfur salt. Okay.
Yeah. Dehydrating, pulling things out, pulling moisture out so that you put that lotion on again, so that you put that hydration on again, which is synthetic.
I just had a revelation. You know, conditioner puts moisture back in, and now sodium lauryl sulfate takes moisture out. You're actually stripping your hair by using shampoo and then trying to put it back in with
that
conditioner.
Has it.
Oh, that's what a great racket.
Yes.
I never thought of that. Yeah,
yes.
Okay, I was just curious.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, and then you get the 2-in-1 where it's shampoo and conditioner. Like, what? Like, how does that work? But,
it's stripping and replenishing at the same time.
Yeah, at the same time. It knows what to do. It knows which hair to
Or it's replenishing and then stripping, which would be even worse.
That's
where the words "and repeat" came from. Okay, all right.
Yes. So those are the things in life. What you're willing to do and how deep you're willing to get into this when you're trying, because relationships is where because people are lonely and people are not understanding why they can't meet someone or just even a best friend. It doesn't even have to be about, you know, being with someone that way relationship wise, but like we need friends. We need someone that will ask us to go get coffee. We need someone that will ask us to go to lunch, that we're not the only ones asking. So that also brings up a point is what happens is the people who are doing the work and are cleaner and are in their emotions and all the things, we're like reaching out. You know, I'll call my, you know, text, hey, you want to do something today? Hey, you want to go to the grocery store? Hey, you want to do this? And so we look like and feel like we're always the one that has to ask. It's like, well, I'm the only one that's ever asking these people to do anything. Well, it's sad, but less people are working on themselves. And so there's a lot more people just sitting there waiting on someone to ask them to do something versus the people that take action, like Action Radio. So there's people like us who are like, well, I want to do something today, so I'm going to ask somebody to do something. You know, that's just natural to me. But there's other people who are like, well, no, I don't want to, you know, they're busy, or I don't want to, you know, it's okay. I'm not going to bother them. But it's because they're not in touch with their emotions. Like, what would you want? You know, when I work on people, it's doing to others as you would have done to you. Time, if I text somebody or if I call somebody or if I touch somebody, doing to others as you would have done to you. And if you think that way all day, number one, you'll see what you want done to you and mm-hmm. be able to, like, oh, yeah, I'm not getting any of that, and figure out your friend group, you know, like, are your friends asking you to do things? Are they talking to you, or are you the one doing it all, you know? Do you always celebrate their birthday and then they don't call you on yours? You know, figure it out. And that's when you start removing toxic people from your life. And usually yep. those toxic people are more toxic in more ways. They're not just toxic as, you know, they're, like you said, they're smokers, or they go somewhere and bring the toxins into your home. That's why it really is important who you allow into your home and who you allow into your environment. Yeah. Which brings me to the whole shot thing and COVID thing. It's back. And more people are testing positive every day. I have two or three clients that, like, I've worked on them, and then the next day they text me, hey, sorry, I'm positive. So we need to get on this path of doing the work on ourselves so that we're safe and effective, I guess, is what you want to say.
Yeah. Yeah. AR-15s are safe and effective. COVID shots are not. It's fascinating. Well, we've got our doctor panel tomorrow. Doctor, world's greatest doctor panel tomorrow. You should call in too, so feel free to.
I will. Yeah,
I know you're busy.
I just don't feel smart enough.
You got to help people.
No, I just feel like I love Dr. Judy and I love all of them, and I'm like, oh my gosh, like I can't compare, but I know I can't. I mean, we all have something to
offer.
You
don't have to compare.
It's like, I know that's who I am though. Like I'm just still working on that. But they're all comrades of mine, and they're beautiful people. And I text with Dr. Jim on the daily usually, and his work on women's cycle is top notch. And I'm just so blessed to be a part of that. Like he's asked me some of the questions that he's done the research on, and because I was affected by that. So it's really cool to just be all up in that. Yeah.
You know,
really
I want
awesome,
this to be a place where President Trump can talk to a plumber in Arkansas. I want this to be a place where the highest and the mightiest, the most well-known international superstars can talk to, I don't know, a hairdresser in Maine. You know, I mean, I want this to be that kind of a show.
And I'm
so
that way. Like it's,
Yeah,
it's so weird. Like if I see a famous person out, which, you know, I've traveled some, so I'll be like, gosh, that's so-and-so. And I'll go up and talk, you know, like, well, they're famous, so they know they're fixing to be talked to, you know. Like, it doesn't bother me. I guess, I don't know. I guess when they're your friends, or, like, not friends, but you've had personal conversations with them, you're just like, uh-huh, yeah, I'm just going to listen because you're smart.
Exactly.
And I like it. And, more people definitely need to hear from them. So.
Okay. I got to hold you up now, though, because we got Michael on the line. I got to play
two or three minutes worth of
stuff before he does. So let's get your contact information. Make sure we do that. And then you're welcome to stay and Chancy on the line, too, and away we go. Yeah, go ahead.
It's chancyterry.com, C-H-A-N-C-E-E, Terry, T-E-R-R-Y.com. And everything's on there. Just hit me up. Pianchi, I didn't hear from you today, but it's good to see you and good to talk to you. Good to see you.
He's there.
Yeah.
Everybody, be careful. Be safe.
Thank you.
Be safe and be careful.
Yeah, we always know Pianchi's there, which is a good thing. Yeah. All right, Pianchi.
Thank you, Greg. Y'all have a great day.
Welcome.
Take care. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye now. Greg Penglis here for my book, The Complete Guide to Flight Instruction. Everyone at some point in their life wants to learn how to fly. Few try. Even fewer go on to get a license. I believe a major reason for that is how we teach people how to fly. My book is designed to help you navigate the flight training system, but it's so much more than that. It really describes an entirely new way to teach flying. So if you've never tried a lesson or got discouraged in your training and quit for any reason, this book can help you. Don't be a rote pilot who just follows procedures. Be a thinking pilot who makes great decisions, who understands all the reasons why we do what we do. You can incorporate these principles into your own flight training at any time. The Complete Guide to Flight Instruction is featured on the Action Radio with Greg Penglis Facebook page and is available from Amazon.com. This is Greg Penglis for Strikeforce, your source for pure energy. Strikeforce is a concentrated energy drink that turns a half liter of your favorite beverage into an energy drink. It contains caffeine, taurine, B vitamins, and potassium. You make your energy drink yourself. Here's how. Add one pack to a standard half liter water bottle or 16 ounce glass to create a full power energy drink. No sugar, no calories, no stirring, no shaking. Strikeforce energy drinks come in original, grape, lemon, and orange. Each flavor pack is a liquid that adds an explosion of flavor to any beverage. Here's the best part. Action Radio is an affiliate of Strikeforce, so our listeners get a 20% discount. All you do is add our code, WYL, to the discount code window at checkout. That's WYL. WYL comes from our website, Write Your Laws. So, you can get your energy drink, get a 20% discount, and help Action Radio change the relationship of we the people to our government. Not bad. Strikeforce is at StrikeforceEnergy.com. That's StrikeforceEnergy.com. Start your engines. You are listening to Action Radio Online with Greg Penglis. The webpage for all Action Radio shows and podcasts is blogtalkradio.com/citizenaction. Please share our show with all your friends and family, both nationally and internationally. The guiding principle of Action Radio is this: we the people give our consent to be governed through writing the laws by which we are governed. And now our guest of the day, Michael Volpe. Well, actually, Michael's part of the family here. Michael Volpe's been with the show, I think, as long as we've had it here at Blog Talk Radio. So that's almost for 3 years. It's almost 4 years now. Yeah, it's 4 years. That's okay. We're having so much fun. The time just flies on by. Michael's an author. He's an investigative reporter. He does amazing work with folks with family law crises and this incredibly corrupt system. But today we're going to have a little fun. This is a topic I know absolutely nothing about. I've avoided these reports on the news. You're going to teach me like you're going to teach everybody else, Michael, but we're going to get into the case of Johnny Depp and I think Amber Heard. That's the only two things I know about it are the characters' names.
Right.
This is such a... Go ahead, Michael, introduce yourself, anything I forgot to say, and I'll let you tell the whole... We got the whole rest of the hour for this, and Pianchi's on the line, too. Anybody else wants to join us and gossip, feel free. It's one of those hours.
All right. It's a lot more than gossip, but let me describe it in more of a broad sense, and then I got a couple of audio clips from the trial these are audio that was introduced into the trial that will, you know, set the stage for it as well. So first of all, why should you care about this case? Well, first of all, you don't have to care. You don't have to care. You don't have to care about anything. There's nothing in the news that you're required to give your attention to. That said, the reason that a lot of people care, and this is the trial of this century, there's no doubt. The numbers that they were throwing out, like there were, I think it was like 19 billion views on TikTok of videos, and I don't know who counted this up, that had like some Johnny Depp related hashtag. That's just TikTok. Okay. The same kind of numbers on Facebook, smaller on LinkedIn and Twitter and all of those other places. But you're talking about like hundreds of billions of views and YouTube. Oh my God, YouTube, just, you know, go do Johnny Depp, Amber Heard into the YouTube search bar and see how much comes up. It's amazing. So
well, also, I want to talk about this today because I don't know the significance, but I know you do, and this is why I wanted you to be the one to describe it and tell me and everybody else what it's all about. Yeah.
Right. So the reason that there's so much interest is obviously the celebrity helps. There's no question that one of the reasons there's a lot of interest, and it's primarily Johnny Depp. Amber Heard has a very small, not very small, but compared to Depp, you know, her career is tiny.
She's like, you know, but look, a D actress, and you got the A list, and you got the
no,
B list.
No,
yeah.
She, well, yeah.
I don't know who she is. I've never heard of her.
She did Aquaman, which made a lot of money, but you know, Johnny Depp's done like 15 Aquaman equivalent movies, and Johnny Depp is essentially universally known. You and I are old enough to maybe even remember him from 21 Jump Street, the TV show, not even the movie. All right? He's been around a long time. He was in the first Nightmare on Elm Street. It was a small role, but he, you know, that's how far back
he goes. Starts somewhere. Yeah.
Right. No, but look, he is known, you know, Ray Liotta recently died. Well, guess what?
Yep.
Ray Liotta played his dad in Blow. You know, and how old is Blow, and how big a deal was he at the time that he made Blow? So that's how long his career is. He's universally known, obviously. Obviously that helps. But all of us have been in relationships. Many of us have been in bad relationships. Sometimes it's abusive. Other times you've been falsely accused of abuse. So that's
the
part that...
the relationship is bad,
right,
the relationship is falsely accused. Yeah, I've been there. Okay, yeah.
Right, yeah. So if you were watching this, you would relate to Johnny. Some people relate to Amber. And look, I'm not going to say anything today that hasn't been said. I believe that she's a very devious person. I believe that not only did she make up a whole bunch of false allegations of abuse, she was doing it at the same time she was abusing him. And she did it in a very calculating manner. It came out in the trial that when she went and got the restraining order, which was 2016, that she had called TMZ beforehand and said, if you show up at, you know, whatever angle, I'm going to come out. It
Roger
was either
Stone.
Her or one of her representatives.
CNN cameras.
Or one of her or one of her representatives. They weren't the person who testified wasn't explicit about who called, but the way the call sounded, it was either her or one of her representatives. She would come out, and then the angle would show like a bruise on her face that you could take a photo of. And of course, that article came out. It came out that she had a whole bunch of photos that of her injuries, supposedly. And then Johnny was able to get like a forensic person. He probably paid hundreds of dollars an hour, and the forensic person kept using the term metadata.
Yeah.
Right, he can afford it, but that's important. There are some things that people can draw from this, but people should understand Johnny Depp had the money to get justice. You need all of these things in place, including a team of lawyers like the one he had, and that's not cheap, but the expert kept saying metadata, so I don't understand what he was saying, except the conclusion was that most, if not all, of the photos that she submitted had gone through some sort of a imaging changing software. I don't know what it was described as. But,
or Photoshop?
Photoshop.
Well,
type, but not, I don't even know. Right. But
I want to back up a little bit, though. I want to get their stories. I want to know, you know, we know who they are. We know who Johnny Depp is. I sort of get an idea of who Amber Heard is. But I want to know, you know, who they are, you know, their relationship. And then I want to find out who's the sociopath and, you know, who's the abuser and what's going on. You say Amber Heard. I want to find out about this. This is really curious. Now, this is precedent setting. And this is why it's important. Mm-hmm. And this is why, you know, I wanted to have you on because I personally have been studying a bunch of other issues, but especially for anyone that sees men as being taken advantage of by the family court system in terms of, somebody who might be abusive. It's
family court. It wasn't a family court trial. So
this is a civil, there was a civil trial though, right?
It was a defamation trial, but it was a civil trial, but it has some relation, but people need to understand what was going on here.
Okay.
It definitely has little relation to family court because one of the reasons that Johnny was able to prove his case was because in this particular courtroom, they followed rules of evidence and both sides got a fair chance to present their side.
Oh,
and when that happened,
so what was
right,
the actual charge
that,
so defamation
it was defamation. She wrote a 2018 op-ed in the Washington Post. She didn't name Johnny by name. However, all of the incidents that she described had already it had previously come out against Johnny. So obviously,
if you folks wanted to, you can go to IMDb or his Wikipedia page has his filmography. What you're going to see is a guy who was working a lot, particularly starting in the 1990s, all the way from 2010 to 2018. He was making an enormous amount of movies. And then 2018 to 2022, there's like a few things here and there, and it's barely even him being in the movie. So clearly, this was not a guy who stopped working, that he was stopped. And it would happen at around the moment that this particular op-ed came out. So,
oh, so
you know,
he lost work because of this then. So this, this
a
is
a ton
definitely,
of work.
This, Johnny okay, so that's a whole new dimension.
Johnny Depp will go down as one of America's premier movie stars, period, mm-hmm. bar none. This guy's been, from Edward Scissorhands to Jack Sparrow. I really liked him as Joe Pistone, Donnie Brasco. Look, he played Donnie Brasco, a heroic cop. He also played James Whitey Bulger, one of the most despicable criminals. He's done both sides.
He did Dillinger,
that.
Too, didn't he? Wasn't he Dillinger in a film earlier on?
He might have been, yeah, his career is long, vast.
Yeah.
He can compare favorably to the Robert De Niro's of the world, the Al Pacino's mm-hmm. when it's done. So for him to stop working, that was not because, they claimed in trial that he was difficult and this is why he stopped working. That's nonsense. There's plenty of Marlon Brando had a huge reputation for being difficult and it did like at times cost him some in his career. So, but he, in fact, there were plenty in the studio who weren't sure that he should be the Godfather before it was made because of his reputation. But he,
well,
got
you can't
the role
do it without Marlon Brando. You know, it wouldn't
right.
be the same.
So,
if you come to me with respect, you wouldn't be on this lousy show right now. You'd be somewhat big, but you didn't. So, hey, go ahead.
Mm-hmm. All right. So it's the same thing. It's ridiculous to suggest that Johnny Depp and look, it wasn't proven that he was difficult or suggested. So but even if he is, no one should think that's the reason he lost roles. And look, he's been making movies since the 80s. What, in 2018, they decided he was difficult and that's why he stopped getting roles. Come on. But
this is really interesting. I want to get on the idea of the defamation, but the effect of the defamation. The effect of this article was it cost work. So she personally cost him millions of dollars, and the Hollywood
correct.
People that
and
went
she,
along with it, the woke folks,
right.
So this is a free speech case. See, I thought this was a family case. I didn't understand the implications
no.
here. This is why I'm
no,
really glad to have you here, but this is free speech. And mm-hmm. one of the limits of free speech, you have, in other words, as we talk about rights, I just want to make this real clear for a second that mm-hmm. rights, as we know, are absolute. You have an absolute free right of free speech. However, once you exercise that, you're responsible for what you say, which means you're outside the right. So you have the right before you exercise it, but if you exercise it, now you're in the realms of legal free speech and defamation,
right,
which
I
is,
it.
You know, yeah.
Defamation is a civil offense.
What is it?
And,
what is it exactly? How do you define defamation?
It's when libel and defamation, one of them, and I don't have it in front of me, one of them is like on TV or something, and then the other one is written. But so it's either written or – so presumably it's got to be written because it's defamation.
Ooh, I got
if
it.
If you write something that's false, that you either know is false or should have known is false. And obviously if you're writing about your own experience, you know it's false if it's false.
Yeah.
And then that causes monetary damages in whichever way to the party you're talking about, they can sue you for defamation. So the Virginia, the UVA, the rape thing with Jackie, a bunch of people sued and they won. Now here's something people need to understand. Johnny Depp is considered a public figure the same way that Donald Trump would be considered a public figure, Nancy Pelosi, LeBron James, Michael Jordan. Mm-hmm. Their standard of proof is significantly higher. I don't know if either U of I would be considered a private figure, but then let's say a high level executive, but not someone who's in the media. If they were, falsely accused of sexual harassment,
yeah, we wouldn't be
example.
Private figures. No, but
right.
it's interesting that one of the biggest defense against defamation.
Hold on. I didn't finish the explanation. So as a public figure, the threshold is higher. It's called actual malice. It comes from a Supreme Court case, New York Times versus Sullivan. And essentially with actual malice, it's almost like you lied. You didn't care that you were lying. It's actually very difficult for a public figure to prove actual malice against a newspaper if they're doing a story about someone else. This was a little bit easier in the sense that Amber Heard was talking about her own experiences. Because if he had sued, and he did sue the Sun, but that was in England and they have their own standards
And then if he was to sue a newspaper, even if he could prove it's false, he'd also have to show that they didn't, that they knew it was false, or that it was so obvious that it was false, they just didn't care. But so he had a very high standard to prove, and he proved it. And so he proved it because, number one, she kept getting caught in lies. Number two, she was totally unbelievable in the stories she said. She described an incident where he raped her, and part of the rape was like a bottle to her private parts, and he like hit her a bunch of times, and he wears all of these rings, and she just happened to, according to the timeline, to have an appearance on some late night show the next day, and she looked like completely beautiful without any marks. And I know you can do wonders with makeup, but not based on the scene that
she
described.
There's still trauma and shock. There's still trauma and shock if that actually happened, yeah.
Right, yeah. Yeah, so, but the scene that she described, she wouldn't have been able to do a show the next day. She claimed in the media that she didn't want any of Johnny's money, and she got $7.5 million from the divorce, and she was going to give
it to charity,
and it turned out
they were married. Right? For how long?
Yeah, they met, not even 2 years. It was a very whirlwind thing that didn't work out at all. Basically, all of this should have ended, except she decided to make this op-ed to turn herself into a victim.
She wanted
probably
money.
Because she...
What did she expect to happen? Well, did that come out? What did she expect to happen when she wrote the article? That he would pay her a bunch of money or something, or what? Or she just wanted to be vindictive?
That she would... Well, she might have wanted to be vindictive, but if you were the victim of domestic violence in this day and age, that gives you some sort of gravitas you normally wouldn't get. She was trying to ride the Me Too wave. I think she thought it would help her career, and in some ways it probably did for a little while. It has.
Well, a lot more people heard of her. I never heard of her. So, you know.
It destroyed her career now, but.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
because
no,
she
it,
lost
whatever.
Or because she
not
she
because
lied
she
so badly.
Well, because of the public reaction, it's so strong. She makes movies and she's universally hated. Who's going to want to go to see one of her movies? And if she was a good actress, you might even have something. But she's not that good an actress, and she was an especially bad actress on The Stand.
Huh.
So.
Did she marry Depp for his money? Or was this planned action? Is she a sociopath? What do you think?
I'm not inside her head. I don't know what her reasoning for marrying him is, but she became very toxic. The relationship became very toxic. And look, there's one other thing. Johnny's supporters, they often will say, no one's saying Johnny is perfect. And Johnny's, he seems to be a drunk. He has some issues with drugs. I told this funny anecdote where he's like, one time I gave Marilyn Manson a pill just because I wanted him to stop talking. And, you know, he had right. Yeah. But look, and that perfect. Look, he has issues. Who doesn't have issues? The issues that Johnny has, no one cares about in Hollywood. He beat up some like closet or something and she filmed it. And yeah. Okay. Big deal. You know what? He's that way. He has issues. And however you want to think of him, on the flip side, the other thing I picked up from this trial is in some sense, Johnny Depp is as cool as you would think Johnny Depp would be. He, you know, there was like a part of the trial where they started reading text messages that he and Elton John were sending back and forth about his drinking problem. And I'm like, Johnny hangs with Elton John? And I'm like, of course Johnny hangs with Elton John. He's Johnny Depp. Probably hangs with like a million cool and interesting, creative, artistic people. And he plays the guitar. He hangs with Jeff Beck. In fact, they just announced that an album is upcoming.
Yeah, there's some, there's a recording of them that made the rounds on the news of them playing together.
Right. Yeah, correct. Because he played with Beck right before the verdict and after. So Johnny, look, he has issues. Who doesn't have issues, especially in Hollywood? But he lives, in some sense, the cool and interesting life that you'd expect somebody like Johnny Depp to live, hanging out with cool, interesting, famous people from all walks of life. He's got a private island. He
he has things that he could work on, but, you know, he, everybody's got issues. He's got it going on. But,
so this was just, so a, just she, a clarifier here. This was, hold on, before I get to the next, this is about his reputation, because obviously, and getting his work back. So this wasn't he
correct.
Wasn't after her for money. He was really after her for a decision.
No, he well he
or
asked,
did he get money?
He asked. He did get money, but he has plenty of money. He wanted his reputation back. That's been clear throughout his statement.
Okay.
His statement right after the verdict came out was about getting his reputation back. That the verdict gave me my that the jury gave me my life back. When he testified, when they asked him what he lost, and he said, "I lost nothing short of everything." That his kids are bothered that people, you know, that they bully them, that
they think he's an abuser, right?
Because
she
right.
abused him of
yeah.
all kinds of abuse and assault and everything else. Okay, so what was the
correct.
Actual verdict? What did it say? What did the jury
so the
say?
The verdict found they sued each other. There was a counter suit, and the jury found on every item of his, they found one item of hers. They awarded him like a little over $10 million, they awarded her a little over $8 million, or over $2 million, I'm sorry. So there's like $8 million and change. That's the difference that she currently owes. It gets really complicated. Now she'll appeal, except my understanding is, in order to appeal, you have to have the money. And it's not, she's saying she doesn't have the money. And if she doesn't have the money, it gets complicated. And he could really go after her if she doesn't have the money, because then you can make it basically impossible to live, because if you're saying you don't have the money, then you have to sell everything you can, and you're left with as little as possible, and then I'm taking everything else, and good luck to you. And then,
but that would look vindictive.
Way,
that would not be
correct.
Good, you know, sympathetically with his audience and with
not
Hollywood.
Not only – correct, and he doesn't, and again, he's probably worth $100 million plus, so does he need the $8 million? If he truly wasn't going after her for that, then but we'll see. Look, like that's still to unfold. That's a few days old. Nobody has to pay a judgment in a week, so nothing.
But just I want to get back to the verdict for a second, because I want to make it clear that the jury found that Amber Heard had defamed Johnny Depp, that she was guilty of defamation.
Right.
Okay. Was there any other finding? Was there libel? Was there slander? Was there anything else? Was defamation the sole finding?
He was also found guilty of defaming her through a statement that his then lawyer made, and it gets complicated. But the actual verdict is unimportant, because the only verdict that matters
–
yeah. Because the only verdict that matters is the one that came from the opinion, because that's what he was going after. The details of the actual specific verdict, the only people who care about that are the lawyers.
I care.
He won in the court of public opinion. I think they counted like 19 billion, as I said, like TikTok videos with like Justice for Johnny and those things, and then pro Amber were like 80 million. He's arguably, along with Elon Musk, the most famous celebrity in the world right now. So he is extremely famous, a lot more famous than he was in 2018. Yeah, he was Jack Sparrow and all of that, but this is the level of interest is unprecedented. It dwarfs the level.
So what's
of
the attraction to this?
Pirates and
why do people find this so fascinating?
Is because you have famous people. Number one, obviously, fame always sells. But number two, everyone is involved in relationships. Many people go through bad relationships. Some people get abused. Other people get falsely accused of abuse. These are things people can relate to, and that was what the interest was. The other thing is the trial was dramatic. Every day there were things that were happening, and if you were following the trial and you were understanding it, you can understand that it was real-life drama. This was reality TV for real, not like the fake reality TV that they have on TV. This was played out second by second, live, as it's happening, and you were forming your opinion as it was happening, and that's why it caught the public. And again, the entree is that you have at least one very famous person, so everybody knows who they are. But once you're in the trial, what captivated people was the drama of it, the drama of the
evidence being put forward. Can I play a couple of these clips?
Yeah, you can. I'm just curious. Two things. First, I wanted to see if Bianchi has a question after we do the audio clips. And two, do you find any comparison to the OJ trial, not in terms of the actual court trial and the verdict, because that was a criminal case, but just in terms of the public involvement in it. So I'd be curious about that. So go ahead and play things. It's from the trial, like I say, as long as we already talked about this, as long as it's not copyright, things can be played on the show. So go for it. Let's hear what they said. Because this is public record. So yeah, right?
This was played during the trial. This is really important. So they had a bunch of different arguments. This is during one of the arguments. It escalates, but Amber says something very important.
Fingers, come on. I had a fucking middle spear thrown on my nose.
Yeah, Michael, we can't hear it.
I don't know if you.
No, we can't
that,
hear it. So
said,
you're gonna have to tell us what she said.
We won't keep. It was faint, but she said, "Tell the world, Johnny. Tell the world that I, Johnny Depp, am a male victim of domestic violence." And she said it in a mocking way, in a demeaning way. She firmly believed that there's no way that a man could possibly be viewed by the world as the victim of domestic violence, and that obviously gave her confidence to continue to do what she did. And guess what? This trial was a global phenomenon, and at least 90%, if not more, of the world believed Johnny Depp, a male, to be a victim of domestic violence. That's a huge change.
That's really significant. Because for years...
Is this an important trial?
Yeah.
Is this an important trial then?
What is now? Yeah, now you got my interest. Yeah. Well, here's what's interesting from the perspective of, because we know guys get abused, you know, and when people say that mm-hmm. men can't be abused in a relationship, well, everybody mm-hmm. sleeps sometime. You know, it's not hard to, mm-hmm. you know, to injure somebody, and everybody can get poisoned, everybody can get all kinds of things. There's a lot of, and mm-hmm. domestic
right.
abuse goes all kinds
men
of
men can also
verbal.
Be... Men, yeah. men can be correct. They can be verbally abused. They can be psychologically
sure.
abused, and they
financially
can be
abused is a big one. There's all kinds red flag laws taking your guns away. Yeah, there's a lot of things
They can be psychologically abused, and they can be physically abused. And mm-hmm. women obviously aren't stronger, but they can also use weapons. So there's mm-hmm. I don't think any woman will ever going forward have this view that and you think Amber Heard was the only one who was like, no man's ever going to be believed they're a victim of domestic violence. Of course she wasn't. So this is it is in that respect an important event that people should keep in mind. It is the trial of the century, at least in my opinion, but the reverberations.
I believe
be
you, Johnny.
The
Me Too. I believe you, Johnny.
They should keep in mind that these are two specific people. This is one specific set of facts, and another woman, other women will step forward. They will count their own stories of domestic violence, and you should not disbelieve them because of Amber Heard. It's equally prejudicial.
But don't automatically assume that men can't be abusers either. And this is huge.
Well,
you know, it's interesting that let me just throw a quick point in here too. That some of the people, men aren't believed in a lot of cases. You know, some of the strongest mm-hmm. advocates for men, all the way from boys in school with drugs like Ritalin, ADHD stuff, and things like that, all the way through family court, are women. Because women are believed more when it comes to social family issues. They just are. That's the perception right now. That's why women gun owners are so powerful. And the message that, you know, as opposed to your basic, you know, redneck Southern guy with a pickup truck and the rifle in the back. You know, so perception is huge. Now, that's changing. That the idea is changing. If Johnny Depp has made a change of perception that men at least will be judged equally, that maybe they were abused, maybe they weren't, you know, as women should be judged mm-hmm. equally. Maybe they were, maybe they weren't, you know, but if there's an equality that comes out of this, then it's worth it. It's really worth it. And that's an angle I hadn't even thought of. So this is good to explore.
Yeah, I totally agree. And absolutely. Look, he broke down a very important stereotype.
Mm-hmm.
And for that, he should be applauded, but I'll just warn everyone, it's it's much easier, not necessarily even easy, when you're Johnny Depp and you number one, can afford to fire a legal team as opposed to a lawyer. And then when your legal team is like, hey, we need these four forensic experts, and they're all $400 an hour, and you're it doesn't even faze you in terms of your financial situation. It's, you know, if you're Joe Blow and your ex somehow produced photos of her looking like she got beat up, and you believe that that they were doctored, it's a lot harder for you to prove it than for Johnny Depp. But he absolutely tore down the stereotype. The other thing is, I haven't been obsessed with it, but I have looked at the comments on a lot of the articles and social media. And now we should actually talk about the mainstream media versus the actual coverage of the trial. And
yeah, let's do that.
Taylor Lorenz of the Washington Post, there's a big scandal brewing.
The Washington Post published the article that inspired this trial. What did they have to say about it? And are they paying anything
what they did was
for publishing?
They issued a long editorial note and then said, we don't take a position on our op-eds. So basically, they're taking a hands-off approach. Johnny could theoretically sue them. I've read it's both very easy and very hard, but he doesn't – that would be foolish. He wanted his reputation back. He's got that back. All of this then would look vindictive, and why do you need to – you know, you'd want to move on. Why do you want to keep suing people? So people should keep in mind that it's obviously easier for someone with that kind of wealth to make sure you get justice, because you can afford to look in every corner. And look, he was represented by a law firm, and the associate, her name was Camille Vasquez. She cross-examined Amber. It was always the plan to have a woman cross-examine her for trial dynamics that make perfect sense, and she destroyed her. She abused her fairly, legally, but just got her caught in many lies. Amber had claimed in the media that she was going to donate all the money to charity that Johnny had given her. And even a part of the donation that she gave to the ACLU, and by the way, small world, was actually given by Elon Musk. And why was it given by Musk? Because they started dating shortly after Amber and Johnny broke up. In fact, some people say not so much
money.
Shortly after that, there might have been some crossover. But,
but
regardless,
she's after the money.
That swung over. Elon's moved on to other people, but he was actually not. I don't know if it was scheduled to testify, but it looked like he might, and then they pulled out. But he didn't, but his name came up. His name seems to come up in everything now. But be that as
well.
Tell
me about this attorney. I want to know who the attorney was. That was it. Johnny Depp's attorney that cross-examined Amber. Who's she? She sounds interesting.
She's now a. She's 37. She's now a partner because they made her a partner. She was an associate, and she became a star. And she's got like a huge following now. But
what's her name?
She, among Camille Vasquez, Camille, CamilleVasquez, if you're a male out there who thinks she's going to date you, she's taken. But in any case,
I just
want to
watch her in action. I want to see what she said. I mean, this is I love a good trial. So my favorite movies are trial films. You know, there's going to be a movie made of this, right? You know, there's going to be a movie. Is Johnny Depp going to play himself?
Right, documentaries, movies, all sorts of things. Yeah, the reverberations from this will be deep, broad. Look, when just on TikTok again, just on TikTok, there are 19 billion views of videos related to his hashtags just on TikTok.
Wow.
You're not even counting the rest of social media, and I would bet there's more even on Facebook, and roughly the same on YouTube. So you're talking about hundreds of billions of views. So, you know, we get 7 billion people in the world. That means a lot of people are really interested in this thing. So they've watched hundreds of videos. So the reverberations will be deep, but she's created a fan base. There's stories all around about, like, they were trying to poach her, other firms, that is, that Hollywood was trying to grab her. And then immediately her law firm brought her up to partner, and that was, like, the easiest call in the world. No one at that law firm should be given any credit for that decision. That was the most obvious decision ever.
Obviously, they should be given credit for having the confidence to put her on the case. That's where they should be given credit for. Long before anyone knew she was a good lawyer, they knew. And that's a much more important credit.
Well, you got to prove yourself before you take a case like this. Are there any – I got a couple questions before we get too far. Are there any feminist groups or women's groups and, you know, I Believe You, Me Too groups lining up with Amber saying this is unjust, we're going to protest, we're going to take action, run around, we're going to appeal. Is she having any backing on that, or are they – realize she's a liar?
Not a lot, no. Her main supporter is a woman named Eve Barlow. She has a blue check mark on Twitter. I guess you're supposed to say that.
What's that mean?
Been verified. In any case, she constantly is tweeting about it, but the main backer who I know a little bit about is somebody, Charlotte. She's from England. She is what they call a barrister. There are two types of lawyers in England, as I understand it, a
solicitors and barristers. Yep. There's a
right.
And I missed her name, though, because you cut out for a second on who that person is in England.
Charlotte Proudman, and she's a feminist barrister. She primarily does – so the barrister does appeals. The solicitor does the initial trial and in the initial phase. She primarily represents female domestic violence victims, and there's nothing you're going to tell her that's going to make her believe that Amber Heard is anything but a victim.
Mm-hmm.
So let me just find she does.
Yeah, the folks that, you know, women are right, men are wrong. That just doesn't fly anymore. Yeah.
Right.
Well, do you think the Brett Kavanaugh confirmation plays into this at all? The way he was so bad treated and the false accusations, you know, and everything else, or no?
This is its own thing.
Okay.
It caught people by surprise.
Hmm.
The trial happened. People heard of it. I think most people couldn't tell you exactly what was happening. Certainly most people wouldn't know the evidence. They could all give you some details. Law and Crime, to their credit, asked for the trial, for them to be able to videotape the trial. The judge in her ruling said, well, we've received a lot of media in this trial. If we don't allow it, it'll just be reported in bits and pieces. And this way we have a record, which is a lot better than just having reports coming out from the media. So she allowed the cameras in. She allowed the cameras in, YouTubers, TikTokers.
You're breaking up, Michael. You're breaking up a little bit. I'm not sure what the signal is. Yeah, try something different. Do they have kids?
No. Hold on one second.
No kids. Okay.
They don't have kids. Johnny has a child, children, some adult, with another, from another relationship. And Johnny's been in relationships with just about every famous person in the world. As you can imagine, she does have a child that it's weird. It was like in vitro or something of that nature. That might be Elon Musk, but I might just be misreading Twitter gossip, but they both have children with other people. They didn't have any children. It was a bad relationship. It started out great. It went bad, and that's where it should have ended. It should have ended with a divorce, and even if she got some settlement, she should have just taken that and been done with it. But she carried it one step further. She destroyed his life. He came back, and as you heard, she did this in part because she didn't believe that anyone would believe a man's a victim. She had that confidence.
So funny. Yeah. So was it the article? Was that the sole reason for the defamation, or did she do other things, other interviews?
No,
other
that's the sole
commentary?
That's the sole.
The Washington Post article.
She probably did, but it was specific to specific statements in the Washington Post article.
Huh.
It was specific to that. So let's talk about the Washington Post and the media.
Yeah.
So,
did she have a ghostwriter?
Did she write the article?
The ACLU.
The ACLU wrote the article. Yeah, the ACLU actually wrote the article. No, it came out that the ACLU actually wrote her article for her, that it was a part of some sort of relationship that they were going to have. But let's talk about the Washington Post right now and what's happening with the media. So, number one, people should understand the media is very, very big, even when you hear mainstream media. But there is a lot of complaints from
the people who have become obsessed with this thing, who have watched either Gavel to Gavel or close to it, or definitely a lot of the trial, that the media seems to be trying to, like, be pro-Amber. There's definitely some of that, but it's not monolithic. That's number one. Number two, that's not going to happen. It doesn't matter what the Daily Mail or the Daily Caller or the Washington Post, New York Times or NBC News tells you about this trial. The actual trial is a matter of public record. You can watch it yourself. Many people have. They have formed their opinion. There is nothing that anyone in the media is going to tell them that's going to change the opinion of them seeing for themselves the trial play out in front of them. So that said, the Washington Post has gotten itself into a little bit of trouble. There is a woman named Taylor Lorenz who works for them. Are you familiar with this
woman? Yeah, I've heard that name. How does she play into this? That sounds familiar.
She's like their tech culture. I can't remember. She basically almost covers social media and those types of issues for the Washington Post. So she was the one who unmasked, if you will, Libs of TikTok. That's a Twitter account that
she wasn't Libs of TikTok. She basically
unmasked
out of the person
she said
that was doing
who,
it.
Right. She also, a while ago, she almost to the point of stalking, followed a guy named Mark Andreessen. And by the way, Mark Andreessen graduated from the same university as me. If any one single person created the internet, it was Mark Andreessen at the University of Illinois. He created Mosaic, which is the first commercially successful web browser. If you don't know what a web browser is, when you're on the web, you're using a web browser that turned into Netscape. Netscape turned into a multi-billion-dollar company. He does VC now. He's a giant in the industry. Him and Elon Musk are friends, by the way. Of course they would be. Why wouldn't Elon Musk be friends with Mark Andreessen?
Oh, can you get Elon on the show, by the way? Can you talk to your friend, your high school person?
Yeah.
I mean,
No? Yeah.
You're not connected? Yeah. Michael.
Right.
We need you.
So anyway, she started following him, and he would do – I can't remember. He got interested in some sort of, like, new I don't remember what they called it, but he would like participate in these like conferences that are supposed to be off the record, and she would be able to like get in incognito, and then, and I believe at times would misquote what he even said to the point where he was like, well, now I'm just going to listen to these things. I'm not even going to speak. And she's done a lot of other things. She's not a good reporter. And then right before she exposed Libs of TikTok, she went on some news show to complain about internet bullying. It's totally ridiculous. But anyway, so she writes this article where she said the real winners are influencers and cloud chasers, I think they call it, and basically people who like try to make a name for themselves on social media by finding the next trend and then riding the wave. And so she talked about a couple of YouTubers who she claimed had like decided out of the blue to follow the Johnny Depp trial. And as a result, they made gobs and gobs of money and they're not to be trusted. And then she, in the article, she said, and I reached out to both of them and neither responded or something like that. But
she
reached out to neither. Right, no. She reached out to neither of them before the article was published.
Liar.
Yeah, and they caught her. The other thing is, like, one of the guys has a pseudonym. She claimed that he made $80,000, and then he said, well, actually, you're citing the source that said I made between $4,000 and $79,000. So you took not only the top end, but over the top end, and I didn't even – and. That's a huge range. And then, you know what, and by the way, Greg, is there something wrong with a guy having a YouTube channel and saying to himself, hey, you know, this trial seems to be getting some interest. Maybe I should do some gavel to gavel coverage and I can get
Absolutely.
Some interest and then make
sure.
Is it? And if he makes a lot of money, this is bad for, I don't, like, what do you, I'm not even sure what exactly is she saying? And then the other one, she goes by her name, but she has a law degree. She's practiced law. She does YouTube videos on the law. And so she decided to do gavel to gavel coverage. And I don't know how much money she made, but number one, the other thing that Taylor misrepresented was both had talked about this trial. This wasn't like they decided out of the blue, but there's nothing actually wrong with them deciding out of the blue. However, the channel wouldn't, realistically, you would not, like, your channel would not be the one that rises to the top. If you were talking about other issues and then you noticed that everybody's interested in Johnny Depp, so you pivoted.
Because no, that's what marketing, that's what knowing a market's all about, is capitalizing on a trend. Listen, we're running out of time. We've got 10 minutes left. I got Josie on the line. I want to ask you something really quickly about defamation lawsuits. Kyle Rittenhouse and Sandman, Eric was his first name, the one who was on the Capitol Hill steps. They've sued the Washington Post for, like, what, $250 million? Is this going to affect?
I don't know if it was
affect,
that much.
Well, whatever it is, is this trial not going to affect them at all? Are those trials completely separate with separate issues?
No.
Just curious. No? Okay.
They're totally separate issues. It has nothing to do with anything.
Just curious.
It's own set of facts. It's not, the Washington, 99.9% of the things they publish, they don't get sued for. So you can't, you can't say, well, because of this, then if they say this, the Washington Post can then say, well, how about these 5 million articles that we've published that weren't sued for then? No,
they were
sued
for those. Yeah. No, I see your point. Let me get to Josie real quickly. Right. Josie, come on into the conversation here. Priyanka, you're welcome to join us again, too. Josie, what's your
question? Only got a couple things to say because I'm driving. It's probably loud. Mainly, Johnny Depp, he's a child pedophile. He's on the number one list, just like Nancy Pelosi. And the whole trial was well organized, we were told, by the deep state. So they can get the whole world and our country distracted from the real deal of John Durham's at the court, at the hearing for Hillary Clinton's and all that. So this is well organized, this whole thing.
Hold on a second. Let's get Michael's reaction to that. I have my own reaction to it. Michael?
That's not actually true. That's just some internet rumor based on this, that, and the other. Either you could call it circumstantial evidence or whatever they find, and frankly, it has nothing to do with anything. Amber Heard falsely accused Johnny Depp of hitting her physically.
Oh, you're breaking up a bit again.
Amber Heard.
Oh, I hate when this happens. Amber Heard accused him of what? One more time. Amber Heard accused
physical,
him of what?
Physical and sexual abuse. None of it was true. He fought back. And as I read to you, go ahead, Johnny, tell the world that I, a man, am a victim of domestic violence. No one will believe you. That's what this trial was about. It was about breaking down norms. It's not about a perfect person. Johnny's a drunk. Johnny's a drug addict. He beat up some closet, all right? He's not a perfect person. No one is. This isn't about lionizing the guy, but he didn't hit his ex-wife. He never hit any woman. He was falsely accused of it. His career was destroyed. He fought back. He has the money to fight back. Okay.
Well, he fought back the right way. He took it to court.
Right, he did.
Did she ever fill out a police report? Did Amber Heard ever go to the police and fill out a police report?
Yes, she did.
She did.
And when the police showed up, they said, we don't really see any bruises. In fact, I think a cop testified. She did call the police once. They didn't see anything. A lot of this stuff came out at trial. All of the so-called evidence that she brought forward was challenged. It was scrutinized, and it was destroyed, a lot of it, by that woman, Camille Vasquez. Again, Johnny's not a perfect person, but you know what? As I said, in some ways, he's as cool as you think Johnny Depp is. He fought to get his name back. He got his name back.
Good for him.
His biggest star. Yeah, he's as big a star as anybody in the world. I don't know what's going to happen to Amber. You would say her career is destroyed, but who knows?
Get another job, production. She's going to go after the next guy with money is what it sounds like, from Johnny Depp to Elon Musk. I don't know who is wealthier. What, Prince Charles? I don't know. Anyway, Priyanka, do you have any more comments here? We've got about 6 minutes left. You want to get in on this, Priyanka? I'm curious your take on it.
No, I'm baffled on this, so I'm just listening. I really appreciate Josie and also this guest here.
Oh yeah, Michael Volpe. Yeah, he's a regular. He comes on whenever he has a really good idea for a show. This is why we do it. Chelsea, do you have another question or follow up?
No, that was it. My comment was that he's a child pedophile and he will be arrested, so he better enjoy all his millions while he's alive.
Do you have evidence of that, Josie? Do you have police reports, evidence?
Yeah.
Any?
Yeah. We will be coming with a lot of evidence. David Strait has a whole map and a list of all the child pedophiles.
Hey, listen, I watched that video. Yeah. Okay.
But I know you're not talking about this today.
No, and I think that guy's an idiot. What a total loser. Yeah, I completely got everything that was in that video.
What guy?
I didn't see the whole thing. David Strait. He is completely wrong.
That's okay. You're
yeah.
wrong.
Right.
Okay.
That's one of our big disagreements.
Listen,
yeah.
People with a passing connection to Johnny are saying these things, and there's no evidence at all of it. Again,
uh-huh.
Not a perfect human. No one is. Also hangs out with Elton John, hangs out with Jeff Beck.
Okay, so that we heard that. Now I want to get something we
right.
haven't. Let me ask you another question. Men's groups. Are men rallying behind Johnny Depp? Are there more
yes.
men
yes,
coming
but
forward?
You know what? Not only, yes, but not
okay.
only. And also Marilyn Manson is now suing Evan Rachel Wood for defamation, and so they're
how do you defame Marilyn
the,
Manson? I'm sorry, go ahead.
Right. Well, he was accused of raping her. So you
wow.
know he's using the Johnny Depp tactic, and there are also women's domestic violence groups who say that this verdict will turn everything back, and we'll see. Look, it might create some fervor for actual guilty abusive men to think they can do the same thing that Johnny does, but it might stop some women from coming forward who actually are abused. But you know, number one, that's neither Johnny's fault nor his responsibility. And you know, this trial is going to have such a huge effect that it's going to have
mm-hmm.
different kinds of effects. But men's
mm-hmm.
rights groups are standing up for Johnny, of course. But I also want you to know that there's plenty of domestic violence victims and domestic violence victims groups who are also standing up for Johnny, and they're saying, we stand up for domestic violence abuse victims, and in this case, it was Johnny Depp.
Mm-hmm.
So,
as long as they're equal about it, you know, you take each case individually.
Right,
you forget the stereotypes of men and women, you know, because both men and women can be abusers, and both men and women can be abused. And once you go with that standard, and you look at the actual case, then if you look at it individually, then that's how you judge it. I mean, that's how all cases should be judged.
Mm-hmm.
So you dump the stereotypes
Correct.
And judge the people. Yeah, and that's the proper way to do it. And so this is a good thing in this case. It looks like they arrived at the right verdict.
Correct. And look, mm-hmm. it's really remarkable that she was on tape saying, go ahead, tell the world. And he did tell the world.
Well, I'm going to get the highlights. I'm going to review the highlights now of the trial.
I'd say 90% of the people who are engaged in this at all and who have an opinion are taking a pro Johnny Depp opinion. So
okay.
that says the world believes you can be a male and be a domestic violence victim. All you got to do is bring forward the evidence in a logical, orderly way, and people will believe you. That's a good thing. He accomplished a lot for himself, for others. He should be lauded for this. It doesn't mean that he's not a drunk. It doesn't mean that he might not
do
something
separate things.
In the next year.
You know,
or
that's like saying if you get your car stolen, but you know, you cheat on your taxes, you know, the police shouldn't do anything. Well, the two totally irrelevant
mm-hmm.
things. I mean, nobody's perfect. You know, the
right.
fact that you got your car stolen
mm-hmm.
is a separate incident. You know, so you go with that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, or if somebody who did steal your car also contributes to the Salvation Army. Well, that's irrelevant. They stole your car. So
mm-hmm.
you've got to separate
mm-hmm.
these bogus arguments. People make it's a leftist tactic. They'll put three or four facts out there,
mm-hmm.
which are not related, or just three or four things out there. And they think by the preponderance of the things they said that somehow the initial premise is true when the initial premise is completely false. And so this is
mm-hmm.
that's a debate tactic. She was using sympathy. She was using the fact that she was a woman. She thought she was popular. She thought she was pretty. She thought she had all these things going for her, and she wanted to use those stereotypes. And she was vindictive. This is like a red flag law. This is like a disgruntled
mm-hmm.
woman, you know, saying that, you know, we got to take my ex's guns because he's a maniac. He's crazy, you know, in
mm-hmm.
the same way that that's wrong. This is wrong. And this doesn't give men an excuse
right.
to do the abusive thing to women either. We got 90 seconds. Why don't you give me?
Correct.
We should get your contact information. Make sure we get that. People want to do more
yeah,
viewing
wanna,
and reading of your stuff. Go ahead. How do
if
they
you
find
you?
You
want to check me out? It's
It's michaelvolpe.substack.com. And look, I do lots of stories about female domestic violence victims. There's you can discern this. I'd say here's the ultimate wrap up. You know, so many judges in family court and other court actors always say, oh, it's so difficult. You know, these allegations in family court, they're he said, she said. Guess what? That's exactly what happened in the Johnny Depp versus Amber Heard trial. What this proved is if you present the evidence in an orderly, fair manner where both sides get a chance to present their evidence, that most people actually can discern in these he said, she said cases, who is the victim, who is the perpetrator. It's not as hard as all of these people claim. Actually, it's probably that you don't allow the evidence in an orderly fashion, and that's absolutely what doesn't happen in family court. There is no order. There is no rules, and that's why it's so hard to get the truth out. It's not that it's hard to figure out what the truth is.
Yeah, so I got a big question in a very short time. If we moved divorce cases and child custody to the same court that Johnny Depp was in, a civil court with a jury, do you think that would go a long way to clearing up the family court problems, basically a family court?
It is a civil court. They don't have rules. The jury might help. It's not a panacea, but a jury might help. Okay. But I think if you're trying to fix it, it's a lot more than that. But as I said, what this proves is create an environment with orderly, fair rules of evidence where both sides get their chance, and you'll more times than not figure out who's the perpetrator, who's the victim. It's not that hard.
Sounds good. On that note, we have to go. Michael, thank you so much. This was brilliant, and I really appreciate you coming forward to talk about this case in such a detailed way because you've done all the research, which is great. We have to go. Greg Penglis for Action Radio at blogtalkradio.com/citizenaction. You can also get our legislative site, writeyourlaws.com. That's WRITEYOURLAWS, writeyourlaws.com. And tomorrow, please keep in mind that we are starting at 10 in the morning central with our world's greatest doctor panel. And so 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. Central Time tomorrow. And then Friday, I'll figure out Friday later. All right, we'll be back tomorrow at 10.